The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week one. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL.
Hey, Steve.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. Did you get your get the pen you like?
I got the right pen.
Uh-huh.
We almost didn't make it back to the seats in time, but I got my pen. That doesn't write.
No.
It's just more for the feel.
Operates on here.
It does. Somebody said when I was doing my single high safety stuff, I should just draw on the board instead of using. Oh, yeah, I could just do it. So we can go X's and O's. Oh, okay. I'll just do that next time.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah, so if you guys are listening.
A lot more sense.
You should probably watch, too, on YouTube, because we can maybe draw some plays up here. I was drawing that sack against the three technique.
Yeah.
For the
That would make more sense than, you know.
Which somebody alerted to me was more of a 2-eye alignment, like a wide nose tackle alignment. I was off, but they were slanting away, so the same principle applied. Anyway, Ireland got smoked, huh?
Yeah, yeah, it went bad.
Sorry about that. That's rugby, by the way.
Yeah. I was saying I avoided the result, watching on delay, and after 10 minutes, we were only 3-0 down, but already I was confident enough that it was going south that I checked the score just to find out how ugly it got.
Can we get a football?
Turns out it got plenty ugly.
Football analogy here? Like, what was the matchup and who won by how much?
This was the take your pick of NFC Championship games. This was the 2017 or 2000 Minnesota Vikings NFC Championship game where you show up, you think you're good, you're against another really good team, and immediately you can tell, oh, this is going bad.
In 2000, they lost, 41-0 against the Giants?
Yeah.
And then against the Eagles. I don't remember what the final was, but it was domination.
So. Yeah. And it was one of those ones where very early on, you can tell, oh, this is going bad.
Sorry about that, Ireland.
Yeah.
Last year was our year, and we really blew it.
Mm-hmm. It's true. So, well, there was no World Cup last year, so, you know.
Well, that's why.
It would have been tricky to win one then.
Well, you just can't. I get nothing. Sorry. Anyway, let's get to Week 7's action. Starting on Thursday night, of course, the big news. Kansas City Chiefs at the Denver Broncos. Patrick Mahomes injured. However, the reports continue to be...
Freak injury.
Yeah, really weird. The reports continue to get more positive. They think... They initially said best case scenario they thought was 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And now Schefter's reporting could be better than best case. Could be even sooner.
I don't think better than best case is... Possible.
Better than their initial best case scenario. Let me just start by this. Everybody trashing the Chiefs for using a QB sneak to get their quarterback injured. And I was tweeting about it. I couldn't remember a time where a QB got hurt on a sneak. I was alerted a few people had picked up some concussions here and there.
That makes sense, at least.
But nobody's running a sneak being like, hey, watch out for your kneecap.
Ran QB sneaks yesterday. How dare they expose Dak Prescott? Like, the point is, how many thousands of QB sneaks, and I don't remember ever. This has never happened before. QB popping his kneecap off with a QB sneak? That's ridiculous.
Yeah, weird.
That is complete and total freak injury. So that's absurd. Like, okay, if you want to make the argument that you don't want to expose the guy to a hit to the head by plowing his way into a pile, fair enough. I can at least understand that argument. But the idea that a quarterback that already has a busted left ankle, well, you're exposing his right knee to his kneecap being popped off by running a QB sneak. That's ridiculous. Be quiet.
Yeah, so that was, overall the game was not good for Denver, looking completely inept on offense. Joe Flacco, when he actually threw the ball, wasn't bad. The problem was the fumbles in the pocket.
Yeah.
Too many of those. He was inviting a ton of pressure. So it looked like Denver's offensive line was getting smoked. They really weren't. It was just a lot of...
Well, it's also
taking a long time in the pocket.
Yeah, it's a few things. Flacco taking some time, but more importantly, like, he's one of those quarterbacks where, like, when the problems come, he makes them worse.
Yeah.
So there's one play that I meant to pull up and throw out on Twitter, but by the time I had, he delivered a pass to somebody else, so it would have been, like, you know, too late, essentially.
Yeah.
But sort of drops back, looks up, there's a guy coming from his left, and it was like, runs to the right and fumbles the ball, complete disaster. You're like, look, whatever about when the guy, we talk all the time about the difference between pressures, hits, and sacks can be, once you're beat, what happens after that is not down to you. It's down to the quarterback and other things, right? Now, there are some quarterbacks where when the pressure comes, they'll find a way to mitigate it, to either get rid of the ball, to make that guy miss, or whatever, to minimize the damage that can happen. Flacco works the other way, where it's like he will find a way to maximize the damage done once the offensive lineman is beat.
Yeah.
So, consequently, when the offensive linemen are beat, it looks worse. Because every time it happens, it's a disaster. And, you know, ultimately, you know, Donald Penn got beaten for one sack back in 2016, and that was the one that broke Derek Carr's leg. So everyone was like, well, Donald Penn wasn't that great. Look, got his quarterback hurt. Like, the guy got one sack. But that's right. All it takes. So Denver's offensive line didn't actually get beaten that often. They 45 pass blocking snaps each. And, you know, Ron Leary was beaten basically one bad pressure. Garrett Bowles was beaten more than that, but so essentially, if you count up all of his penalties and all of his pressures, we're talking like 7 plays, which is bad, but it's way far away from the worst plays you're ever going to see from an offense, or the worst like ratio of pass blocking to, you know, pressure and bad plays you'll see from an offensive lineman. You know, you see guys double digits, horrendous type ratios. Bowles wasn't that bad. But every time it happened, it looked worse because Flacco finds a way of maximizing the damage.
So just looking at the numbers yesterday, or this entire week across the board, Dak Prescott was pressured only 5 times, 3 of which became sacks. So again, right. I love referencing this stat. Percentage of pressure dropbacks that turn into sacks. It's all a part of your premium stats 2.0 PFF Elite package. It's just a great way to figure out, okay, is the quarterback at fault for some level of this? Joe Flacco, 44%, 8 out of 18 of his pressure dropbacks turned into sacks. Daniel Jones, we'll get to him in a minute. He looked a lot like Flacco yesterday with regard to the sacks and the way he maneuvered the pocket. He doesn't have a great situation with the Giants, but yes, he's taking far too many sacks as well. So,
but for example, Taylor Decker yesterday coughed up 7 hurries. Had a penalty as well. It gets a lot worse than Garrett Bowles was in that game, but it's all about, you judge offensive linemen by the end result, and honestly, the end result isn't really their doing.
Right.
They give up the pressure. At that point, it's other things that determine how bad it gets.
He did have 3 penalties as well, Bowles.
Right, that's what I was saying. So if you add them all together, it's 7 total bad plays,
right?
Essentially.
All right, so Thursday night, Kansas City, they win 30-6. Matt Moore taking over that offense going forward. We'll talk more about it on the preview show, but it looks like they're going to roll with Matt Moore. There was a point where Matt Moore was we used to joke, like the gem of the quarterback free agency market every year, because he'd be on all these one-year deals as a backup, and he'd been pretty good the last time he played in like 2011 or 10 or whatever it was. So he should be able to run the offense efficiently enough with Andy Reid, with some of those playmakers. My concern would be the offensive line. They trotting out Cam Irving all year, even after a solid start to the season. He's regressed back into Cam Irving at left tackle. And then Martinez Rankin starting at left guard. He was a guy that the Texans were ready to cut. Became a throw-in in a trade to the Chiefs, and he's not very good.
No, he was probably the worst offensive lineman on the field in that game. Which is interesting because they have a significant upgrade sitting on the bench, who admittedly only just got in the building, but Stefan Wisniewski should at some point take over that gig, because why wouldn't that happen?
Wisniewski's weird, man. He just always seems to have put up solid grades for us, but not always sticking around.
He
wasn't great last year, but like
he took a big step back last year.
He's got more good years than bad years.
And if I was trusting which one of those was going to get back on track, definitely Wisniewski. Yeah.
I am all for, you know me, I'm all for, give me the veteran that's at least done it before, and hopefully he can stumble back into some success rather than hoping a young guy develops. So we'll talk more about the Chiefs as we look forward. Where do you want to go with tomorrow's actions? Yesterday's action. Where are we? Yesterday, Sunday.
Yeah.
Week 7. Give me a game.
We better hope that this isn't done in order with our fancy new, where are we going? Over here. Fancy new ticker thing that we have down here. Let's hope there's no game thing in order. Otherwise, we'll screw up time.
Oh, we don't have to go by order, right?
Can we talk about Daniel Jones? Well, let's start. Sure. Let's talk about Daniel Jones and see if the wrong team pops up over there. And by over there, I mean over there.
Where does it pop up?
Pops up right here in this little thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm just going to start watching our monitor.
Right. So if we start talking and somebody else's game pops up over there, we did it wrong.
ESPN's not going to grab our show if we continue to just be so unprofessional.
We're just scratching the surface here, Steve.
Yeah, we're just learning.
So
help us.
Daniel Jones.
Yeah.
Numbers are still being finalized, but as of right now, for this weekend, Daniel Jones leads the NFL in turnover-worthy plays and in big-time throws. What is amazing to me is that somehow the New York Giants have managed...
Say leads the league?
Yeah.
Leads the week?
Leads the league this week.
Oh. Yeah, I did the reviews.
Right. What's amazing...
4 big-time throws?
What's amazing to me is that somehow the New York Giants have managed to replace Eli Manning with Eli Manning.
I wasn't amazed. That's exactly what we said.
Right.
That's what they were looking for.
But it's a complete clone, right? We've got goofy Manning face. We've got aw shucks personality. We've got like sideline pictures of the two of them looking the same. We said pre-draft, the one of Daniel Jones' most impressive traits was his mannerisms in the pocket. And now right down to crazy turnovers / big plays left and right. Now, here's a really interesting question, right? If you were told that you could, or Eli Manning, his career is coming to an end. It's been an unquestioned success because he had two great streaks that took you to two Super Bowl championships over the dynastic New England Patriots. So great job, Eli. Take a seat. We'll debate whether or not you deserve a place in Canton somewhere down the line. But for now, you did your job. Excellent. We are thrilled. And we're going to replace you with effectively the same guy, only he's probably not going to have those two Super Bowl rings because that was absurdly improbable. Now, is that good?
No, I mean, it's so if we think that Daniel Jones is in this highly volatile group of quarterbacks, which
the question is,
I stand by my pre-draft view of him as a Nick Foles type of player.
If Daniel Jones is Eli Manning without the Super Bowl rings, is that good?
No.
Hmm.
It's not.
Okay, because that might be what they've just got.
Okay. I'm going to skew more positively on Jones today.
Yeah?
Pocket presence was a disaster. We've charged him with 6 sacks over the last 3 or 4 games. I mean, so that would be the difference between him and Eli. I know he's a rookie. I know all of this.
He's also literally averaging 2 throws a game that go directly to defenders. That's 8 in 4 games now.
That's very Eli-like. I understand that. Yesterday, I think the weather was a factor in a bunch of games. I think we have to acknowledge
we'll get to that in a bit.
In a lot of our analysis, weather was a factor. I think his situation is horrendous. I mean, if any other quarterback, if Aaron Rodgers was being, well, Aaron Rodgers doesn't have the best playmakers to throw to either. He's making them good. If other quarterbacks were throwing to this group of playmakers, we would be mentioning, hey, he's thrown to Darius Slayton and Cody Latimer, and the O-line's crept back toward average. They're not horrendous. Daniel Jones did make them look a little bit worse. So it's not like the best situation that he's in.
Mm-hmm.
And he's shown flashes of some good stuff. I think ultimately he does come back to this Folesian type of high highs and low lows. And just like Foles and just like Eli, you're hoping that the high highs lead you to the promised land when you have the perfect situation.
Yeah.
Which Eli had a great defense. He didn't have a great defense both of those years. He had a defense that played great in the playoffs.
What's interesting.
And he had some playmakers to throw to, and he had the ability to just make plays down the field, which he did.
What's interesting is that even just anecdotally over the last, 10, 15 years, there have been quite a few of those guys that have done that. So
sure.
I keep mocking you with the whole Jameis thing. you know, it's never going to happen. But you've got Cam Newton strung together an MVP year, went to a Super Bowl, albeit didn't win it. Eli Manning put together two seasons where he did. Joe Flacco put it all together for that one run that got him a championship.
Carson Palmer.
Nick Foles took over, put his three-game stretch together, won. Carson Palmer had the MVP season, MVP caliber season,
right,
and then it fell apart in the playoffs where he got injured and just couldn't play. So he didn't get there. But that's a lot of guys that are in that high volatile spectrum that actually did find like it all aligned for that one either season or stretch enough to get them to the Super Bowl. So I would intuitively say the chance of that actually happening are pretty minimum, but you can point to a lot of guys where it did.
I think as an organization, you have essentially one of three options. You have one of four options, and this goes back to the QB tiers before the season. You either have one of the top guys that even if you've got Jake Kumerow to throw to, Aaron Rodgers finds a way, or Brady throwing to Philip Dorsett and Cordarrelle Patterson in the playoffs last year, they find a way, or Drew Brees throwing to Michael Thomas and a bunch of no-names last year, they find a way. So you've got the top-end guys who are just going to figure it out. And then you've got the tier two and three guys who have some sort of volatility, the Jameis Winstons, the Cam Newtons, the Carson Palmers, maybe the Daniel Jones guys, Nick Foles. And then you got the safe guys, Alex Smith, Marcus Mariota's generally been on the safer end where he's just not really going to, he's not going to have the high highs to carry a team. Tannehill is actually in that similar boat. So if you have the highly volatile guys, you can kind of hope that you catch a stretch. You catch a stretch of play. And there are certain volatile guys. Philip Rivers might actually be in that bucket. He's probably in the top-ish tier, but he might be in that highly volatile bucket if we look back at his career. Because he's had some rough seasons and he's had some really good seasons where it's like, man, this looks like a top five quarterback. Anyway, I think yesterday in particular was more encouraging. I don't know. It's like right in the middle.
It was.
There was encouraging and there was discouraging. Yes. And that's, I think, going to be the story of Daniel Jones. The highs are high and the lows are low.
Right. But ultimately, you have to look at who he was playing, which is the Arizona Cardinals. And not a great defense, albeit one with Patrick Peterson reinstalled in the secondary. But that's, I think that opposition would skew in your favor in terms of making you look relatively good. But yeah, we're looking at a guy who is classic young-ish Eli Manning, which is he's capable of making all these crazy big-time throws, but God, just stop throwing the ball to defenders. How hard is that? They wear a different color jersey than you for a reason. You throw to the guys in blue. They're in red. Or white and red.
I like how you keep it
Don't
simple.
Throw the ball to them. Like Rex Ryan had to break out a traffic light system from Mark Sanchez. This is traffic lights on the field. Throw to the blue people, not the red people. Stop. I mean, just
there was only one bad throw yesterday.
Right, but that's now eight in four games that he's thrown straight to defenders. Like not ones where, you know, things are broken towards the guy and he's cut in front. Like you've thrown it at the guy. There is a defender there in a different color jersey to you, and you've thrown the ball to him. There's only so many times you can do that before bad things really happen.
Okay.
Stop it. Right. That's all I would say. Stop it. Because you're capable of making some great plays. And then, you know, after that, fix the fumbling in the pocket problem.
All that said, Kyler Murray didn't look much better on the other side either.
No.
He missed a few throws. Had a couple nice ones in there, but this was it was more of a defense-driven win here.
Yeah,
for the Cardinals.
And sadly, running game, because the Giants didn't have a run defense.
Yes, and the run game certainly carried them as well. Chase Edmonds, 27 carries for 126, forced five missed tackles. Kyler had a couple, one or two big scrambles in there that also helped. A run-driven, defense-driven win for the Cardinals.
Max Williams, by the way, is having the most like comically efficient season ever. Guys, you know, out there, doesn't get much in the way of interest in the passing game because obviously the Cardinals don't care about their tight end. But as of right now, he's caught all eight targets that have been thrown his way.
Well, they do now, though. They're running a lot more two and sometimes three tight end sets.
Right, but I mean in terms of who's receiving the ball.
Oh.
So they're out there a reasonable amount, but they're not significant parts of the targets. So Max Williams has eight targets, eight catches.
But they've been... The part of the adjustment that they've made in recent weeks is using more tight ends. Charles Clay played 29 snaps yesterday. Max Williams played 31. Your boy Andy Isabella was out there for 10, and he was
big game.
Pretty much
big game, Andy.
Just a decoy.
He's had 22 snaps in the last 2 weeks.
If you look at what the way they used him, it was pretty much just on jet motion, faking pitches. And
yeah, first two targets this week, two catches for 8 yards.
Yeah, it was purely as a gimmick player.
Yeah, which, by the way, as a, you know, if your primary gig is supposed to be a deep threat, two catches for 8 yards, not really ticking those boxes.
Nope, not yet. All right, so Arizona on a bit of a roll here. That NFC West really looking dangerous top to bottom. Like teams you just don't want to play, especially if Arizona's defense plays like they did yesterday.
Yeah, but against the Giants. So,
you know. Sure.
I just think it's fascinating that we've gone from Eli Manning to Eli Manning 2, version 2, 2.0, whatever you want to call it.
When you scout like that, that's what you get. When you're
But surely that's got to be a completely different...
They were specifically looking for him.
They were specifically looking for Eli Manning.
You could tell. You could hear the things that they like, the things that they want. They've been having a tough time moving on from Eli Manning because they love his personality and they think it works in New York. There's all of these things that Eli showed that did lead to those two Super Bowl wins. They were looking for in a quarterback and feel like they found it in Daniel Jones. Like Baker Mayfield has a completely different personality. Josh Allen has a completely different personality. These are guys that they passed up.
You're telling me that over the last few years of declining Eli Manning and we desperately need to move on from this guy, they were steadfastly, we are not moving on from Eli Manning until we find a new Eli Manning.
Well, they were also convincing themselves, well, he's in, you know, OTAs making NFL throws,
right?
Which, you know, 50 guys in the world can do anyway. So anyway, let's move on.
Okay.
Give me another game.
The Rams beatdown of the hapless, abysmal, wretched Atlanta Falcons.
Last year we were doing, funerals for teams?
Were we? I don't even remember.
I think as soon as we were like, all right, these teams are done, we would, Atlanta might be the first. Like Miami's funeral was week one, but like sure. Atlanta, this is just sad now.
It was.
A home game losing 37-10.
That was depressing.
Against the Rams. Matt Ryan injured as well. Matt Schaub came in dealing, by the way. You wrote him off after that Hall of Fame game, too.
Well, anybody can come in midway through a game and just sling the ball.
He's making some throws. Matt Ryan, so speaking of offensive line issues, I did not expect Atlanta's offensive line to be great. I wasn't expecting them to be crippling.
Yeah.
And this is also one of those, even if the grades don't show it, Matt Ryan is just rushed. And I also, the more I'm watching this offense, Dirk Cutter running this offense where he is, you know, he's the guy that has been grooming Jameis the last couple of years. And we always talk about Jameis's volatility, which is in part due to the types of concepts that they run. We're talking 15, 20 yard downfield concepts. And there are a ton of plays you see yesterday where poor Matt Ryan sitting in the pocket, like, I got three vertical routes here. Somebody get open, please. And every now and again, he throws the deep out really well to Julio and the deep comebacks and all that stuff. But there are certain times he's just a sitting duck and he's rushed and he's got these vertical concepts that are just not great, which is the opposite of what, even when Steve Sarkisian was calling plays and getting trashed, he was calling some plays that put Atlanta in favorable situations. So from Kyle Shanahan to Steve Sarkisian, this Atlanta offense was scheming it up well, creating open throws. They had good playmakers and they had a good offensive line. Now it feels like a lot more vertical, go beat your man type of routes behind an offensive line that can't protect and a very rushed Matt Ryan. And that's just in the offense isn't even the worst of their issues.
Right. Like we said a couple of weeks ago or even last week, that at some stage, sometimes you just have to make a change because things have gotten so toxic that something needs to change.
So Matt Schaub, you want to start?
No, I'm not talking about quarterbacks. I'm just talking generally, right?
Kidding.
In Tennessee, it was the quarterback, right? At some point, you just have to say, look, what Mariota is doing is not acceptable. Even if it's not a massive clear upgrade, we need to change something. Something needs to change in Atlanta. Like, there's an institutional problem that needs to be, something just needs to happen because this team right now is drowning in its own ineptitude. And I don't care what you change, but something has to change because this is obnoxious. You know, so if we could relate this to me again for a while.
Yeah, let's do that.
If you've ever played in a game, usually just a sort of pickup game, but you can go back to your own athletic career, Steve. I believe you've had one. if you're ever playing a team that is so overtly much better than you are, right? They're more skilled. Yeah, probably not bigger than you because you're a large gentleman. But if they're bigger, faster, stronger, just generally, this is only going to go one way. They're going to win. You're going to spend the entire day getting pretty pissed off because that's what happens when you lose. And the only thing left to do is to make it ugly and turn it into a fight, right? And you're like, well, look, I may be losing, but at least they're going to suffer more pain than I will.
Can't relate. I was never a fighter.
So in this game, this is what happened in this game because Devontae Freeman was so frustrated by how things were going. He picked a fight with Aaron Donald.
That was not smart.
No. Now, I have a certain degree of sympathy for the idea that, look, things are going bad. Let's just pick a fight and start, you know, you get frustrated, violence, you lash out. But, you know, pick your targets better than that.
Yeah.
There are a lot of small people on the Rams. You could have found, you know, a guy more or less your size and had a fair fist of it. But Aaron Donald? No. Like, the entire thing, it was like a full-on, like, scuffle. And the entire time, Donald is just, like, holding him here. Like, what are you even doing? And Devontae Freeman's just getting more and more annoyed. You know, like, when you're...
That was great.
The cartoon thing of where you just put your hand in front of a little kid's face, and he's, like, swinging away wildly.
That
you
I
just,
can relate to,
you just
yeah.
keep him at arm length.
Yeah.
Aaron Donald basically just held Devontae Freeman there while he was trying to punch him in the head and doing all kinds of stuff. No, look, find a better target than Aaron Donald. And this then he got ejected at the end of it.
This is why you're here, for your Monday morning analysis.
I'm just saying, this is how bad the Falcons are. They caused Devontae Freeman to pick a fight with Aaron Donald as a better option than just let things keep going as they were.
I imagine they're quite frustrated in Atlanta.
All of them. Everybody.
Because they're not... I mean, now, when I look at the starting lineup right now in Atlanta, okay, it doesn't look great. They've been looking... you know, Desmond Trufant.
Hmm.
It looked like coming into the year is going to be Desmond Trufant. And okay, can Isaiah Oliver develop? Like, who's going to be the guy next opposite him? Trufant's had his own issues. Now he's hurt. Last week, it looked like Kendall Sheffield, the rookie, you know, had shown signs of life. Then he gets torched yesterday. Isaiah Oliver hasn't developed like they wanted. So the weaknesses aren't in a good spot. But then just talent aside, I mean, this is like... I can't remember if I made this analogy, but remember when spread offenses took over
uh-huh.
in college football, and then Rich Rodriguez goes to Michigan, sure. and he's like, I run the spread. I just had Pat White.
Yeah.
And then he's got two big statuesque quarterbacks like me, and he's running the spread.
Yeah.
So then it became this age of everybody's going to run the spread, no matter who you have. We're just going to run the spread. We're going to run spread, you know, zone read stuff with guys that can't even move, and it just looks terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you're running bad spread. Atlanta's running the bad Seattle 3. It's like, we're going to run this scheme. Guys don't know how to pass off routes. Nobody's carrying through their assignments. We don't have the personnel for it, but we're going to keep doing it.
And
that's
also,
what this
as
looks
we
like.
Said, it, teams know how to beat it now. So unless you have version 1.2, 3, 4, 5, whatever, unless you have the updates, it's not going to work.
But, you know, Chris was talking about this on the broadcast last night because Dallas is running elements of this. And, you know, he was talking to Chris Richard, you know, the defensive coordinator there, too. And he's like, yeah, we know what beats this, too. You just rep it.
That's passing game coordinator.
Passing game coordinators. Yeah. He's calling plays, too, isn't he?
Yeah, but they've got this weird thing where him and Rod Marinelli, like, divide the defense in half.
Right.
Rod takes the front. He takes the back end.
Oh, I got you. Yeah. So his job is to essentially teach guys on the back end how to pass off routes, how to carry this crosser and all that type of stuff. So they rep it out. You know, the whole point of, I mean, it's like when offenses say we only run a handful of plays, we just, you know, dress it up and then run them extremely well. Like, that's the point of the Seattle defense, is to run it extremely well and have answers for all the things that you know you're going to face every week. Atlanta doesn't have answers. They're not. Maybe they need more reps. No, I mean, they're just not, they're just wide open.
Right. But I think a lot of that defense. is it's not, I don't think you can do what Seattle did with this defense back when they first had it. I think teams are far too aware now of where the weak points are, where the stresses are, and how to get at them.
Yeah.
Now I think you need the more advanced developments. And I think there's still something to using that kind of concept as your base, but you need to have, you need to have adjustments. You need to have answers to what you're going to face, and they don't. So I don't want to like needlessly bash announcers, but every now and again on a Sunday they say something that's just funny, mm-hmm. and I feel it's worth pointing out.
You're going to name names, or just
yeah, I will, because I like the guy, so I think it's fair enough to say when he says something kind of silly. It was Charles Davis. I think Charles Davis is actually one of the better color announcers out there.
Yeah, I like Charles.
But at one point, he says, he starts talking about Vic Beasley. Like, now, Vic Beasley's one of their best pass rushers. I know the stats don't show it, but he is one of their best pass rushers. Now, he's absolutely correct in that the stats don't show it. But here's the thing. Nothing else does either, because Vic Beasley is one of the most consistently poor pass rushers in the NFL. He looks like he shouldn't be.
So is he wrong? Is Charles Davis wrong?
Yes.
Is he one of the Falcons' best pass rushers?
No.
He is, though.
No, he's not. I mean, well, it depends. How far are you extending one of?
Like top three.
Like, top three. Like Grady Jarrett, Tack McKinley. They must have, anybody is Vic better Beasley. Third than Vic Beasley.
The rookie, John Kaminsky, has been
right.
pretty good.
But the point is, he's one of the most inept pass rushers. Like, he, you know, he talked about that because, again, he like referenced the 15 sack season or whatever it was, which we, at the time, pointed out was fool's gold.
Yeah,
because sacks are not always equal. And in that year, I think half of his sacks came from either cleanup or pursuit pressure, where he basically wasn't blocked at all. So we were like, well, that was inevitably going to regress. It did. And since then, he's been utterly unable to generate any kind of consistent pass rush, despite looking like a guy that should be able to generate a load of pressure. So, Charles, I love you, but no.
Vic Beasley's not that good. Beasley also was in coverage, trying to cover Todd Gurley. So this was kind of like an old school, I don't know, I thought the Rams did a really good job scheming it up. Goff still left a few throws on the table in this one. Gerald Everett with the monster game.
Yeah.
Catches a deep ball, screen for a touchdown. But then you've got Todd Gurley creating the mismatch against Beasley. That was one of Goff's better throws for the touchdown. And see what happens. Todd Gurley comes back. They score 37, despite 18 carries for 41 yards and forcing three missed tackles on his 2.3 yards per carry. But yes, Todd Gurley, they did use him as a weapon in the pass game, particularly on that pass. That was helpful. So I thought the Rams kind of got back on track at the same time. This was like last year when we talked about, is this a breakout game for quarterback X against the Tampa Bay Bucs defense? Like the first 8 weeks of the season, it was,
yeah.
Hey, Mitch Trubisky had a great game. Hey, Matthew Stafford had his best game of the year. This is everybody against Atlanta. Is the Rams offense turning a corner?
Or did they just play Atlanta? Yeah.
Tune in next week. We'll find out. So ebbs and flows of the NFL. Plus, it was in a dome.
Dome, God. Let's go to the NFC North.
How important is the dome when you see the rain and wind games around the NFL and how much it affects the pass game?
I don't think it's that important at all, unless the rain is so bad that it's Washington levels.
It's rain.
We'll get to that in a bit.
The Seattle Baltimore game. Dude, Lamar played well and he had five drops.
Sure.
The guys weren't holding on to the ball.
Yeah, whatever. That happens. It happens in other games. We've seen games.
But it happens more often.
Michael Gallup had three drops last week in a dome.
Well, yeah, that's rare. That's an out.
Oh, okay.
All right, NFC North. Kirk Cousins show.
Kirk Cousins is back, apparently. Back to back. This is why you pay Kirk Cousins games.
42
goes out there and slays the Detroit Lions on the road.
In a dome.
But again, legitimately, you kind of called it, right? If Kirk Cousins is going to get back to being just a rank average quarterback, he's going to need to play a couple of ridiculously good games to crawl his way out of the hole he's just dug himself.
He's done it.
And that's exactly what he's done. Now, what's different to before is that they've come against what, at least on the surface, looked like reasonable teams. Now, turns out the Eagles are now losing games, so maybe they weren't as good as we thought they were. And the Lions have lost, let's say they've lost a game over the past 2 weeks and then been screwed out of another one. By the way, the creativity, variance, variety, and frequency of Detroit Lions in the stands in various referee comedy get-ups in this game was pretty spectacular.
Yeah.
It was a bunch of people in the stripy jerseys with clown faces on. There was some dude that had like a dozen yellow penalty flags in his pockets, and like every time something happened, would just start like flinging a penalty out from the stands. There were some pretty spectacular ones. There was a dude pregame.
Did the Lions play the Saints this year? They would have fun with that.
Where like the officials were walking by, you know, just skirting the field on their way to the whatever, and this dude like offering him $50 from the stands. yeah, the Lions fans did well with that. But legitimately, Cousins was really good again.
Yeah, he was legit. I mean, this is what people expected from the offense. I mean, it felt like you know, I'm trying to take in as many games as possible at the same time. Felt like every time I'm looking up, he's running some kind of boot action. They're working the play action game while they're booting to the left a ton, and it's working for him. I mean, he just looks much more comfortable. And this was, again, I think what we expected, or what the Vikings expected from Kirk Cousins, is a number of games like this, where if you give him the good playmakers, he can make some plays down the field. Yesterday, 13 of 18 for 209 and three touchdowns off of play action alone, just off of play action. I love the aggressiveness when they're running out the clock and you can hear the announcers like, oh, he's throwing it. He's keeping it. And he's, you know, he throws the bomb to Stephon Diggs. I mean, that's what they're expecting here in Minnesota.
Yeah. You've got to be a little bit concerned about their depth at receiver. You know, a spectacular. So Adam Thielen catches the one 25-yard touchdown. Great throw, great catch to drag both feet as he goes down. But as he went down, I can't remember what he hurt, hamstring maybe, tweaked something.
Yeah.
So he only played 9 snaps. At that point, your offense is obviously Stephon Diggs, but now you're down to the tight ends and Dalvin Cook out of the backfield, and even CJ Ham out of the backfield apparently. But after that, your wide receivers are Olabisi Johnson and Laquan Treadwell. I don't understand how everybody is able to find a slot receiver now. How are the Vikings so weak at receiver outside of those top two guys?
I think they really feel that they're a two wide receiver type of team, whether it's with the fullback or with the two tight ends and working the run game and play action off that.
Yeah,
I do feel
the
like
the problem with that is once one of those guys gets hurt, you're not.
But I think it's because when you go in with that mentality, you're like, I need a backup at X and Z. I need backup two wide receiver set receivers.
They don't have those either.
Well, just saying. But Treadwell and Johnson are more in that mold, right? Rather than your traditional slot.
My problem is more that they're not very good.
Yeah, I understand.
And would seem like they could be easily upgraded if you just took a random fifth round receiver in the draft.
Yeah.
Any year. So what's interesting is that this offense is basically right now, it's Kirk Cousins throwing to those receivers and Dalvin Cook, and everything else isn't great.
Yeah.
And again, that feels to me like at some point that runs out, or it requires all that cooking all the time to be a long-term sustainable game plan. But as you pointed out last week, they're actually in a great spot now because those three road games are out of the way. They won one of them. Now their schedule gets easier.
Sitting there at 5-2.
And they're in a good spot because they're sitting there at 5-2.
Now you'd also expect Cousins. So the same way we said, man, there's no way he's going to play this poorly.
Yeah,
for the rest of the year.
Play this well.
There's no way he could play this well. I mean, just we always talk about passer rating as just a raw production of the passing offense. You can't expect your passing offense to have essentially a passer rating of 130, 140 like he has each of the last 3 weeks. And then just from a PFF grade standpoint, he had a 25.8 grade in week 2 against Green Bay. But since then, 86, 61 against Chicago, and then 84, 93, 92.4. Like the 93 and 92.4 as game grades are ridiculous. That's up. That's like better than Foles' 2-game stretch in the conference championship and the Super Bowl. That's extremely difficult to sustain. That's what we do here at PFF. We say, good job, guys. This is going to be tough to sustain. But tons of credit to Kirk Cousins.
Crazy good
game. Who's turned this around.
From Marvin Jones. 10 catches, 93 yards, 4 touchdowns.
Yeah.
Which came against three different Vikings corners. So it got beat Trey Waynes, beat Xavier Rhodes twice, who, by the way, looked ugly yesterday. Beat Mike Hughes for one. Marvin Jones just wrecks the Vikings pretty much every time he plays them.
Yeah, Marvin's legit. Stafford still staying aggressive, throwing the ball down the field. I mean, I do think I said in the preview show, I expected more of a shootout. I expected two guys to, go throw for throw, and that's what it was. I think I bought into Detroit's defense more than I should have. I mean, they're a man-heavy team who on paper doesn't have great players, but players that were doing okay. But it's even like when they shut down Kansas City at the time, it's like, well, they shut them down for like 28 or 31 points or whatever it was, and they had a couple, some lucky plays in there too. So I just don't know if I completely buy into Detroit.
I mean, I think the Vikings have the horses to beat them. Like Darius Slay is a top corner. Adam Thielen beat him a couple of times in his brief stint. Justin Coleman has been one of the best slot corners in the NFL.
Yeah,
Stephon Diggs beat him a few times inside.
Well, plus, as much as the refs screwed them on that Monday Night Football game, Aaron Rodgers also had two dropped touchdowns in there. So just if you're evaluating Detroit's defense, like, that could have been worse outside of the illegal hands to the neck penalties.
Yeah. So anyway, the Vikings are in a reasonable spot. This was a big win for them. Can Cousins keep it up?
Are we in another year where you're just looking at the NFC and it's like Vikings, Saints, Packers, Seahawks are still there, 49. There's going to be six teams making the playoffs and you just don't know who's going to who's going to go. Yep. And then the AFC, it's like New England, and let's see how healthy Patrick Mahomes is, and let's see if Deshaun Watson can go on a run. And
yeah, pretty much.
End scene.
It's New England, and like, Patrick Mahomes is the only thing that can keep the Patriots from the Super Bowl again.
Or Watson. NFC, I mean, it's either New England, some sort of upstart young quarterback, or that's it.
Yeah.
Right? Or in the NFC, it's legitimately wide open, and in, you know, home field advantage and some of that stuff's going to be huge.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not tremendously confident that the Texans can stop the Patriots, but sure.
Jacoby Brissett.
We go there next.
Did you want to stay in the NFC North and just wrap up Aaron Rodgers?
I mean, okay. Mine was a neater segue, but whatever.
Oh, okay. Well, you... All right. Go where you wanted.
Well, okay.
Houston.
Where...
At Indy.
Deshaun Watson got screwed out of a incredible touchdown because somebody blew a whistle.
Yeah. That was a good play.
Really was.
Put kinda it on crazy. Him and everything.
There's got to be some kind of... You need to keep the whistle, you know, out of your mouth where you have quarterbacks like that can do insane things.
See, I'm back and forth on this stuff too. There are certain plays where people are like, hey, we gotta let them play it out. Don't blow the whistle. And then I keep coming back to this ridiculousness. Like, a quarterback throws the ball 8 feet in front of him or 8 yards in front of him, and they're like, oh, it could have been a fumble. Don't blow the whistle. And you got dudes killing each other. And it's like, oh, we preach player safety, but we're never going to blow the whistle.
That part I think is okay, because you have to treat it as if it's a live ball, because if you screwed it up, you messed with the turnover.
But there are obvious ones. There are ones where it's like a batted pass.
I'm fine with that. But if you treated every play the way they treated this play, one of the greatest Super Bowl plays of all time would never have happened. The helmet catch wouldn't have happened. They'd have blown Eli dead in the grasp, and we'd have stopped playing. You need to give these guys the ability to get their way out of an ugly situation and make a play, unless maybe you consider that there's a guy barreling down on him with the only outcome being his death, at which point, okay, maybe save him from that. But like, Deshaun Watson just has his foot is caught in a guy's grip. He's fighting his way out of it, and he ends up delivering the ball to New Hopkins for a touchdown. Like, you weren't risking the man's, like, let him play. He's one of the most dynamic quarterbacks in the NFL because of the ability to make plays like that. Don't
blow it
dead.
Do you want player safety, or do you want...
I want common sense. Is that too much to hope for?
It might be. This is another huge game for Indy to pull this one off. I wasn't expecting them to do it.
Four touchdowns from Jacoby.
Yeah, Jacoby's been one of those guys we said, look, he's not playing as well as some of the numbers, but this was a strong game for him. I mean, Watson played well too.
Beautiful, classic Eric Ebron game. Catches one of the best passes you'll ever see anybody. Snags a one-handed back of the end zone. Somehow gets both feet down to the point where live you're like, no way he got a touchdown there. And then replay, like, oh, wow, both feet came down. And then stone-handed drop on something way, way easier, like 5 minutes later.
Yeah.
Perfect Eric Ebron game.
You see Adam Vinatieri said, hey, that's one of the top 25 touchdowns I've ever seen. And Ebron said, yeah, because you've been in the league for 85 years.
Yeah, 22 years.
I think the NFL 100 should just be a chronicle of Adam Vinatieri's career.
He should just do it, right?
2 degrees of separation. You should forget about Chris and Rich Eisen hosting it.
NFL 100 presented by Adam Vinatieri, and he just takes you through the best 100 things he's seen.
I mean, he's like probably 1 degree of separation away from like Otto Graham. So he's got like he definitely played with a guy who played with Otto Graham, right?
When did Otto Graham pack it up? Like the
50s?
I mean, possibly.
He's probably 2 degrees of separation away.
Yeah, if you went like Otto Graham, who was
we need
George
Eric
Blanda. And...
Yeah.
Vinatieri.
That's great. So Adam Vinatieri doing the NFL 100 stuff. So Indy just continues to show. I think our analysis coming into the game was you've got two secondaries that are another, you know, nameless groups, beat up groups. How are they going to handle particularly Watson in the passing attack the way they've been playing? And then the Colts, you know, their ability to, they shut down Mahomes, but I don't know, just, I expected points in this one. I just thought that the Texans would win a shootout, and the Colts just continue to find a way to win.
They do.
Impressed.
Yeah.
It wasn't as close maybe as 30-23 would show.
This is a good team that, you know, we said the sort of one of the tragedies about Andrew Luck walking away is that this is the best roster he's ever been on.
Right.
And decided that, you know what, it's just not worth it. The pain is consistently too much. I'm done. But it means that this team is still in a good spot with Jacoby Brissett because he's not a bad quarterback. He's not a great quarterback, but he's good enough to win you games if the rest of the roster is good, which it turns out it is. Also, so we talked a bit before about J.J. Watt, the 2019 version.
Yeah.
Ben Stockwell messaged me this morning with a play that sort of highlighted it. And he was like, I think where this relative lack of explosion compared with earlier in his career actually shows up is the run game now. Because do you remember the way he used to, and still does in fact, but just doesn't make the same number of plays. He used to play the run game in a weird way, which is to play it from the wrong gap. So, you know, run defense works because you get a body in every single gap, unless you're the Raiders. And just by having a guy there, it makes it very difficult to generate rushing yardage because now you need to move that guy out of the gap in order for the guy to go anywhere.
Right.
So generally there's a body in every gap. Now, what J.J. Watt would always do and still does is I'm significantly faster and more explosive than the guy trying to block me. So I'm going to actually jump out of my gap and go the long way around. And because you're not expecting that to happen, I'm going to beat you into the backfield and make the play. And he used to make a crazy amount of plays like that. Yeah. And you're like, this is insane. You should not, like, this is 100% not how it's coached to do. But because he's so crazy, he's able to make it happen.
I could draw it up.
Can you?
There used to be plays.
Oh, God.
Where if this was the blocker and this is Watt.
Yeah.
Right? By the time the running back was getting the handoff back here, this was completely flipped. You'd pause at the handoff. So the handoff's here and you're like, J.J. Watt is standing
in the backfield.
Yes.
Behind the guy trying to block.
Like he's already won his block by the time the handoff has happened.
Yeah.
There were times where that happened back in the day.
So the point is that...
So what'd you see?
Well, so usually he's supposed to go like this, right? Straight inside, make the play. And instead, he tries to go around this way because this guy's trying to block in that way, make the play. Now, he used to be explosive enough to make that happen all the time. Now, it doesn't quite seem to be able to get it done. So you see a lot of plays where J.J. Watt essentially jumps out of his gap. There's a play there in the run game because he should be there and he's not able to make the sort of the hero play,
yeah,
to go around the long way and make it happen. Isn't able to make it happen anymore. So right now,
keep it up.
His pass rush grade is still insane. His run defense grade is a significant drop off from where it's been in the past. And even now, or even in the past game, I think it manifests itself when he goes up against top level opposition. So he's got basically really dominant grades and a crazy amount of pressure against effectively every single player he's gone up against, except Ryan Ramczyk and Mitchell Schwartz, who are arguably the top two right tackles in the NFL right now. So it's like J.J. Watt is the 2019 version of J.J. Watt is still a devastating pass rusher, but the relative lack of explosion appears to manifest itself in no longer being able to make the run plays that he used to make. I think if he kind of if he has this moment of Manning-esque self-realization of, wow, I just can't make that play anymore, and adjust what he does, he would still be a dominant run defender.
Yeah.
Like if he just played his gap the way everybody else does, he'd still be good. And then also, as a pass rusher, I think J.J. Watt can now be legitimately shut down against the best players in the NFL in a way that wasn't true before. Like so,
but in this game, he had 12 pressures.
Sure, because he's not going up against one of the best right tackles in the NFL.
Right.
But it's like Aaron Donald, right? Right now, I don't think any player can shut down Aaron Donald one-on-one. If it's an honest contest, he will win. That used to be the case with J.J. Watt. There was no player who one-on-one could shut him down. Now I think there is because he isn't the player he used to be. Having said that, he's still a dominant pass rusher and by far leads the league in total pressures.
I think if you're looking at the Texans, we mentioned the secondary being an issue. You've got Philip Gaines.
Uh-oh.
with a 33.5 coverage grade, and rookie Lonnie Johnson, 28.7 coverage grade, gave up all nine of his targets for 97 yards. So 16 catches allowed between both of those guys. That's been my concern for the Texans.
Yeah, I mean, just look at the mismatch of T.Y. Hilton against Philip Gaines. Just on paper, that's horrendous.
Yeah.
Lonnie Johnson's is less excusable because most of his damage happened against Zach Pascal, which is not exactly, you know, terrifying one-on-one matchup.
Also had a nice pass.
Or
had a pass in there. Not a nice one. I think we had an overthrow.
Whatever.
He had a pass.
So anyway, the Colts, kind of still good.
Colts continue to roll. So they're coming off a bye. So they've now beaten the Chiefs and the Texans over the last couple weeks. And those are the teams we're talking about competing with New England at the top. The Colts don't have to play in New England this year, so that bodes well for them.
Yeah.
I think going forward, for whatever that's worth. All right, let's touch on Miami at Buffalo.
Yeah.
We have to say nice things about Miami.
I don't have anything nice to say about Miami.
Ryan Fitzpatrick, not that bad.
Isn't he?
It's the same old Fitzpatrick.
John Jenkins was dominant.
There you go.
Everybody was bad except John Jenkins in this game. The end.
That's it?
Yeah.
Josh Allen made some nice plays for Buffalo. Still, there's still like one or two plays per game. You talk about Daniel Jones and, you know, some of his pocket presence issues or turnover worthy plays or whatever. There's still like a couple plays per game where Josh Allen's blitz recognition or just it's generally blitz recognition. The best quarterbacks do this seamlessly and you don't even notice it. It's like, oh, there's a blitz. Let me just throw this ball to the flat. And I feel like I've said this one before, too. But all those. Hey, that's an easy throw for this quarterback, right? Well, the best quarterbacks make the easy throws just look easy because it's like, oh, there's a blitz, therefore this guy's open, and I just make the throw. There's like one or two plays per game where Josh Allen just freezes, and it's like, oh, there's an unblocked pressure. Let me just try to juke him and out-athlete him. And he did that in this game, too, where he tries to juke a slot corner, and he's scrambling around, and he still ends up taking the sack, and he's got two wide-open guys in the flat on either side of the field, so whether you're throwing behind the blitz or away from it doesn't matter. Those are the types of things he needs to tidy up. I mean, I think Bills fans are happy with him because the defense continues to give up under 20.
Yeah.
So you can, as an offense, they can trudge their way through the game. And then he did a nice job. He had a beautiful touchdown pass. Like he's made a few plays down the stretch, makes a few plays with his legs, and you're happy. 2-point conversion and all that stuff. Great. But man, does he need to start making some traditional quarterback plays more efficiently.
I think my favorite sight in the NFL right now is Lee Smith catching passes.
That's a sight?
Yeah, it's amazing. Lee Smith basically is a tackle at this point.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he was always a blocking tight end, but you know sometimes there's a fuzzy gray area between blocking tight end and auxiliary tackle. Like, Lee Smith is, I think he's crossed the gray area and he's actually into auxiliary tackle. Like, from a body, he's listed at 265.
That's the move Kyle Brady made at like year 12 in his career. Right. Lee Smith started his career like that.
He's listed at 265. If he is within 20 pounds of 265 on the north end, I would be amazed. Like, he is a monster. He looks like a tackle running pass patterns. And then every now and again, he gets a pass from Josh Allen. It looks amazing. It's a beautiful sight to see. I think we should all embrace this. I agree with you. I think this is kind of what we've been saying about Josh Allen, that you can overlook a lot of bad because of the spectacular plays he makes. But at some point, you need the bad to get better. Otherwise, you're just going to be stuck with this quarterback that's not terrible, but going to be a problem in terms of, you know, long-term winning. I understand they're winning right now, but there's some schedule things in there. There's the fact that the defense is incredible. Like, at some point, you're going to need the quarterback to do more, and we don't yet know if he's capable of doing that.
Right.
Obviously, all the defense looked great because they were going against Miami.
No, I mean, the defenses look great every week. I think they deserve
a ton of credit. Specifically.
Yep, they deserve a ton of credit in Buffalo. Where do you want to go next?
We talk about the Mud Bowl.
Let's do it. San Francisco 49ers at the Washington Redskins. Sometimes I think games like this should be just completely thrown out of the pass game analysis, at least.
Well,
maybe
yeah.
All of the analysis.
I mean, this was an absolute downpour. There was so much rain in this game that it was one of those ones where when people are running, every step they take is like a explosion in the water because of the puddles in the field. I was actually kind of amazed how well that field held up.
I know.
Like, if this was just a random field somewhere, you wouldn't be able to see grass at the end of it. It would just be mud. But this actually looked like a field by the end of the game. I was kind of impressed by that. Now, it was also great because anytime anybody hit the ground, they like Klinsmann slided 10 yards.
Yeah, the end of the game was a great. Nick Bosa with the sack.
Yeah.
And then they all just go head first, baseball slide. Right.
It's pretty impressive.
In the water. I mean, I don't have much else to say about that. It was tough to throw the ball.
So this was like every rain generally is not great, right? But a little bit of rain should not completely prevent you from throwing the football, as happened in a few other games. This, though, was sufficient rain where you could actually see that they basically couldn't throw. Like, Jimmy Garoppolo physically could not throw the ball. Every single pass he attempted came out wrong, right? You know, the very minimum, almost every single quarterback throws just a general spiral, right? This looked like someone that could not throw a spiral throwing a ball every time he attempted a pass. Now, some of them got to where they were supposed to anyway, but you could see that's not supposed to be the way it comes out of his hand. He was having problems simply throwing the ball because of how wet it was out there.
Yeah, overall, I mean, from a quarterback grading standpoint, we had middle of the pack grades for both Case Keenum and Jimmy Garoppolo.
These conditions is actually reasonable.
Which isn't bad, right? Garoppolo had a pick, which was on fourth down, kind of had to force one. Keenum threw the ball 12 times. I mean, they just didn't have to do a whole lot. Adrian Peterson ran the ball 100 times. They were still trying to establish the run, 20 for 81.
How happy do you think Bill Callahan was that this was the conditions?
That's perfect.
It's like, oh, sweet. Now I can just load Adrian Peterson up.
There's like a piece of him that's like, hey, we did our job. We ran the ball and kept it close. Mm. We scored zero, but, you know, we kept it close.
We were in it right till the death. Yeah. Till they took an unassailable 2-score lead.
This is one of those, like, I think the Niners defense was going to have another good game, but it's just going to add to their statistical legend right now.
9-0 was a good score, but 6-0 would have been even better.
True.
It's like we elected to take the field goal, put it to a completely out of sight 6-0, knowing that there's no hope of them scoring.
What was your favorite 9-0 game in NFL history? I actually have one.
You do? What was yours?
2006, Steelers-Jaguars. I think it was week 2. Big Ben was coming off. Remember the motorcycle accident and all that stuff? They'd won the Super Bowl, had all the offseason controversy. But I was a big Jags fan at the time. Big Jags fan. The Jags defense, both defenses just like hit hard. Like it was just, I just remember it being like a really fun defensive game. And I'm an offensive guy. I want to see offense. I want to see good passing and all that stuff. I hate watching bad quarterback play. This just felt like Byron Leftwich and Ben Roethlisberger had to work so hard for every yard. The running backs had to work hard for every yard. I enjoyed that. 2006, Jaguars 9, Steelers nothing. Ben Roethlisberger's return.
What a fun trip down memory lane that was.
How about that? Well, that's all I have to say about the 49ers and Redskins 9-0 game.
This was just fun. It was a fun game to watch because of the conditions. Like, I know Renner hates this idea of like snow games or anything that there's sometimes where just the conditions being so ridiculous makes the game fun to watch. Now,
I like it in college. I don't like it in the NFL where we're all like numbers driven and it screws up the analysis a little bit.
Sure. But this is the 49ers were playing the Washington Redskins. If you don't have any other what is the reason to watch this game other than crazy mud bowl antics? This was fun. I enjoyed watching this game.
Great. Anything on the Jacksonville Jaguars win over the Cincinnati Bengals?
Minshew just continues to win. Just continues to get it done.
He played pretty well. Andy Dalton had a bad pick six. I think the second one.
He had like 3 picks in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, one was a screen pass that probably wasn't on him. Running back just got buried, but essentially a passer rating of 3.2 went under pressure for Andy Dalton, including 3 picks. 3 picks, 4 completions. That's not going to get it done. I think I'm just going to pose the question, and this is not a knock against Andy, but is it Ryan Finley time, if you're the Bengals, to just say, hey, what the heck do we have?
Yes.
Or is this just as bad as throwing Josh Rosen out there with the Dolphins and you're never going to figure it out?
It's definitely not good. On the other hand, you're already operating the damage limitation offense with Andy Dalton in there. So, you know, maybe give it a whirl.
Let me just sum this up. By the way, Andy Dalton had 3 rushing touchdowns, or he has 5 on the season, I believe it is. Another one. He did not have... So he was one of the highest graded players on the offense. I just want to just for perspective here, Andy Dalton, with his terrible passing stats, had one of the highest grades on the offense. I think that sums up this Bengals offense right now.
I mean, we did this last week, but just read out the offensive line left to right. John Jerry is starting at left tackle. Billy Price, who was so bad at center, they had to bench him despite being, what was he, a first or second round pick?
First round.
Despite being a first round pick, they were like, no, you're so awful. You're going to be second string on this ridiculously horrendous offensive line. He's now starting at left guard because they don't have any other options. Trey Hopkins at center, Alex Redmond at right guard. Bobby Hart is still out there at right tackle. This is a terrible, terrible offensive line. Whoever is playing quarterback has no hope because of that. Now, that doesn't mean you can't learn things, but they're not going to do well.
Throw Ryan Finley out there. Another monster game for Calais Campbell, both as a run defender and as a pass rusher. Bengals defense misses 12 tackles. So, yeah, issues. Jacksonville just still lurking around with Minshew. And Juwan Taylor, right tackle for the Jags, had the best game of his young career. The rookie. How about that?
Hmm.
Just trying to give some insights on every game, even if it's not the most attractive one.
And that's what you came up with.
That's what I'm coming up with. And wait, we need a positive for Cincinnati. Rookie defensive
tackle. They're still
in
the lead for the number one overall draft pick.
Okay, that's your positive? I was going to say, Rennell Wren had his best game.
I kind of liked him at the Senior Bowl.
You did?
Yeah.
Senior Bowl scouting.
Yeah. Seriously, look, the Miami Dolphins are actively trying to tank for the season, and yet somehow the Bengals are still in the lead for the number one overall pick. That's a hell of an achievement they should be proud of.
Both teams lost by 10 yesterday, so the Dolphins are learning. You don't have to lose by 100. They all count.
Yeah, this is kind of amazing that this game, just the amount it dragged on for.
Well, the Bengals have been making those great late comebacks. It just kind of went the other way.
Anyway, that wasn't a great game.
Aaron Rodgers is back, 42-24 over the Raiders. It looked like
all of the touchdowns.
A Big 12 stat line. He played. This is one of those games like he's got a stat line that looks like he should have the best PFF grade of all time. 25 for 31 for 429, 5 touchdowns, perfect passer rating of 158.3. I think he'll be the highest graded quarterback of the week.
He had a rushing one as well, didn't he?
Had a rushing touchdown as well. So, yeah, it was a very good game.
He was really good.
His Monday night game, which wasn't nearly as good statistically, was excellent as well. It was similar. He had 2 drop touchdowns. He was on point. And he's doing it with no Devontae Adams. And again,
still. What? Still.
Yeah, still. I mean, I think not that these guys are terrible, but I really think this is like it takes a top quarterback to take Geronimo Allison, old Jimmy Graham.
Old Jimmy.
Alan Lazard, his boy.
Made a hell of a catch.
MVS, Jay Kumaro. I mean, he's just taking these guys and throwing accurate passes that they can catch. I mean, that's it.
Well, this was a game that I think some people had correctly been questioning whether he was capable of again. You know, Aaron Rodgers, at his best, did this all the time. And we haven't really seen that much of it.
Right.
So this was pregame. I saw a fantastic segment. I can't remember which pregame show it was, but they were talking about how, trade deadline is approaching. Some teams are sellers, some teams are buyers, right? Denver, obviously, fire sale. Cincinnati, fire sale. Tear this thing down, rebuild in the draft. But other teams, they've had unexpectedly good starts to the season. They're now buying. They're trying to let's add some pieces while we're on a roll and see if we can ride this momentum all the way to the Super Bowl. And they were making the point that the Oakland Raiders believe themselves to be buyers. That cracked me up. The concept that building is sitting there going, guys, this is it. It's happening. It's happening, guys. Let's get out there and start shipping some trades for linebackers and see if we can really ride this momentum. And then they go out there and they just get eviscerated by the first good team they play again, having already been eviscerated when they faced the Vikings. Like, this is not a great team in Oakland. And when they face good teams, they're going to get pretty badly beat up. And, I mean, you just looked at, like, Gary and Conley was getting victimized at times in coverage by these guys that are not great. Rodgers looked spectacular, but this said a lot about what the Oakland Raiders are right now.
Well, I mean, his last touchdown was one of those, like, Tony Romo did a great job. Watch him. He's setting the protection. He knows it's man. He's going to hit the 5-yard out. But ultimately, it's like a 5-yard out, which was a nice play by Aaron Rodgers and should have been like a 7-yard first down and turns into like a 60-yard touchdown, whatever it was.
I mean, they've got Darryl Worley out there playing, one of their primary corner spots.
We said, we're not believers in the Raiders, because if you look at their three wins, so their win against the Colts in Indy is probably one of those most unlikely outcomes of the season,
right?
We would say, right? We're good win, talking up Indy.
Good win, but right now is looking like an outlier rather than a statement of anything.
Because they got smoked by Kansas City.
Sure, that'll happen.
Especially in the second quarter.
Mm-hmm.
Smoked by Minnesota and then Green Bay. They beat Denver in week one at home. They had the outlier, I think we'd say, at Indy. Nice win. And then they beat Chase Daniel-led Chicago Bears, which I think...
who, it turns out, may not be great anyway.
Yeah, we think... I mean, we think Chicago is more of an 8-8 team. And they're still probably coming off this like last
plus
year.
Plus, it was
people
in London.
Think that they're, anything can happen in London.
Yeah, the Bears didn't get there till Thursday or whatever, right? Wasn't that the thing? Everybody that gets there late in the week, if they lose, that's your problem.
Look... it feels like
you
they've been going to London since what, 08, 09? Yeah. No, before that, like 06 or 07.
I think it was the first year.
There are enough data points.
You
that
should
tell
probably
you
know when to
you
go.
Should know
yeah.
When you should go to London.
Yes. You should probably know when to go at this point.
There's like 50 games that people have played.
Also, like, why delay it? If you're going to London, just go. Get there as soon as humanly possible. What is the downside to going early?
You don't want to be distracted by the.
They set you up
Big
in like
Bang
a.
Clock
they
stuff.
Set you up with like a ridiculous facility out in the middle of nowhere, like where the whole thing is dedicated to you.
You don't want to be all touristy and stuff.
Eh.
Big Bang Clock.
The Big Bang Clock. God.
Brandon, remember that?
Yes, that was yeah.
Whew. Brandon Merriweather. He became a regular segment in sports radio in Boston.
Our boy in there, Austin Gale, pointed out that this was like the perfect game to illustrate why you don't draft a running back high, because Josh Jacobs had like the game of his life, 21 carries, 124 yards, 8 broken tackles just in the run game. Also, what did he snag? A few passes for 10 yards. Couldn't have mattered less because everything else was bad. So, that back in the day when all any team could do was run the ball, that kind of stat line would have won you a game. Now it might, like if everything else goes your way, but if it doesn't, it doesn't matter. So Raiders, they draft this guy, he has the game of his life, and they still get whooped.
Darren Sharp made the first start of his career.
Darren Waller, by the way, is still like a dynamic pass catching weapon somehow. A tight end for the Raiders.
That's an interesting development.
It really is.
So you're one of the, I don't want to talk about this for more than 30 seconds.
Okay.
You're one of the few people, Derek Carr fumbles the ball out of the end zone.
Yes.
Which was a poor decision by him.
Yes.
To try to
not the first time he's done it.
You're one of the few people that doesn't hate that rule.
Correct.
Because Twitter implodes.
Yes.
When that rule happens.
Uh-huh. The goal line matters. Don't be an idiot with the ball around the goal line.
Okay.
The end.
So again, the rule is if you fumble it at the one, you get it at the one. If you fumble it out of bounds at the one, you get it at the one. If you fumble it out of bounds through the end zone, you lose the ball.
Yep.
And it becomes a touchback for the defense.
Yes. The limits of the field in play matter. If you break the plane of the goal line, it's a touchdown, regardless of if the ball is batted out a millisecond later. If you fumble the ball through the back of the end zone, it matters. Hold on to it.
But the defense did nothing to earn the football back.
Right.
That would be my issue with it.
What about the offense earning the ball back in other situations? If you fumble the ball...
Well, because every other situation where you fumble, you get the ball back. It's like, hey, you fumbled it, you idiot, but you're lucky it went out of bounds, so you're going to get it back where you fumbled it. This feels like they didn't say... I feel like they didn't make the rule because of what you're saying. They're not saying, you know what, we need to really make the goal line matter, and the offense is going to lose the ball. I think they were like, well, if you fumbled at the two, you get it at the two. You fumble at the one, you get it at the one. You fumble at the goal line, you can't get it at the goal line. What do we do? Give it to the defense.
The end zone is treated differently to the rest of the field in multiple areas.
You think the NFL decided to make the rule because of that?
It's treated differently in a variety of different ways. There are passes that are touchdown catches that would not be receptions anywhere else in the field. But because it's the end zone, that's the whole point. You just need to have possession, 2 feet down, we're done. Touchdown. It is a different area of the field, so don't sling the ball in the end zone. It's simple.
But that's because there's no such thing as like forward progress and stuff in the end zone. It's different, not because it's the goal line. It's because when you
forward progress,
it's because when you have possession, the play's over immediately.
Right,
and there's
but it
no
isn't
other
else in the field.
But it's not because the goal line's special. It's just because that's what happens when you cross.
Yeah, it's
because
the end zone is special.
Yeah, because you crossed the paint.
Right, but that cuts both ways. If you're able to get a touchdown.
But it's not because it's special. It's because other things don't matter.
If you're able to get
yards after contact don't matter, and forward progress doesn't matter if you're if you've crossed the line. The play's dead immediately because it's immediately a touchdown.
It is a unique,
which has nothing to do with where you fumble the ball.
It is a unique area of the field. If you're able to get touchdowns that would not be receptions anywhere else in the field, you also have to accept the fact that you can get a fumble and a turnover that wouldn't be a turnover anywhere else in the field. Live with it. Don't extend the ball like an idiot diving for the end zone unless you're capable of holding on to it when you do that. It's not that hard. Apparently it is for Derek Carr because this is not the first time he's done it. So maybe learn from your mistakes and don't do that next time.
All right. I don't have a strong opinion. It just feels like a really harsh. I think one of our listeners actually may have tweeted at us, like, what if the offense just gets the ball back at the 20?
Why should they?
Because I think the defense needs to earn the ball back a little bit. To me, it's the defense that's making out more than the offense is losing out here.
Meh.
The defense is getting a freebie here. Anyway, Derek Carr, that crushed your grade a little bit. Don't do that.
Don't do it.
Because you know the rule, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know the rule.
Well, particularly because you've done it before.
So, all right, you know, 4 o'clock slate to get through here.
Okay.
And then Sunday Night Football, Chargers, Titans. Man, they just play some crazy games.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Tannehill. He looked all right.
Yeah, he played well.
That was an upgrade over Marcus Mariota. I don't think it necessarily will be long term, but so I put up a play.
I don't know that it was, though. I think it was just.
Yeah, it was.
What do you mean, yeah, it was?
I put up a play on Twitter that was an example of why. Tannehill made a few passes in this game that Mariota is just not even attempting, and if he is, he's not completing right now. There were plays out there. Tannehill didn't look amazing, but Tannehill is at least, again, it's this idea of you are playing sufficiently badly that we need to make the point that this is not okay. Tannehill might not be a demonstrably better player, but he's at least making those plays. You're like, right, if you had been making those, Marcus, you would still be on the field right now. But you're not, so we're putting Ryan out there, and he's able to take advantage of Hall of Famer Corey Davis.
Now that part.
He's able to get the ball to Jonnu Smith. He's able to fire the ball in the direction of some of these receivers and actually let them make plays. You're not doing that, so consequently, your ass is on the bench.
I mean, Mariota's also 3 weeks removed from doing this. Now, granted, it was against Atlanta.
Uh-huh.
But it's not like we haven't seen these games from Marcus Mariota before. Now, I'm not disagreeing with the switch, but let's not get caught up in this. We're not the media here, Sam. We're not the media. Like, see, we told you Tannehill was the guy. He's 1-0, and I haven't done that.
I'm just saying that so far they have shown why they benched him. And there have been plays in this game that showed exactly why.
Okay.
Why they made the decision.
Now, in
one game, it's worked out. That doesn't mean it will long term.
Let me talk about why I do like Ryan Tannehill. I don't love him, but he's been a pretty good quarterback. Intermediate accuracy is solid. And yesterday, 8 for 9 at the 10 to 19, that intermediate range. And then his short area accuracy is pretty good. He was 14 for 16 in the 0 to 9 yard range. So, I mean, he's never been a great downfield thrower, but I also look at this offense of Hall of Famer Corey Davis, of A.J. Brown. I mean, I look at the way they've constructed it. He had some nice passes to Jonnu Smith. I do think this is an offense that up to 20 yards should be able to do some damage in the pass game. So having a quarterback that can distribute to some of those guys, you know, does make sense.
Yep.
So that part I liked.
What is Corey up to now in career receptions?
Come on, we don't have time for this. We don't need to.
He is up to 121 catches.
You don't get extra credit. He was 6 for 6 all target, you know, for 80 yards yesterday.
So this is also Jeffrey Simmons back, like 8 months after an ACL. It's pretty insane.
By the way, I forgot Adam Humphreys too in the short area. They're just built to win up to 20 yards. Yeah, let's talk about Simmons.
By the way, I was thinking this morning. If you tore an ACL now, how many years would it take you to get back to be able to do anything?
Okay, judging by the fact that I probably got like a little inflammation in both knees.
Uh-huh.
That's been lurking around for 3 months now.
That's what I'm saying.
And ACL is a good 3 to 5 years, I'd say.
I thought 6 years for me.
6 years for you?
I left my phone in the car this morning, right? I had to go out and retrieve it. And I'm like leaning in on my bad wrist, tailbone's giving me pain from having fallen on it. And I was like, one cough, my entire body would just be in pain right now.
See,
like, I'm kind of getting sick of everything hurting.
I think this is we're learning what the new segments are going to be on our podcast.
About. But I was like, we're in our mid to late 30s, right? How is Neil still alive? Like, everything must be broken on him.
Because he works out for 3.5 hours every morning.
But that would be making it worse. There must be nothing left on him that isn't wrecked.
I assume that the first 5 to 6 years of doing that were difficult. And then you're good.
You think there's a pain barrier that you break through?
You're
after
giving
6 years?
Him credit. The guy can't even stand up right now. He's working from home because he's got back injuries. Don't give him too much credit here.
I'm just saying, like, if I tore an ACL right now, 8 months for Jeffrey Simmons, I think I'd be down for about 7 years.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, but every 3 months, Neil has a crippling back injury where
that
he
is
can't
true.
Even make yeah. it. No offense. I mean, he's in great shape. He's ripped up. He's slim.
But apparently it comes at
cost. He sets goals and he achieves them.
Yeah.
But, you know, some back injuries creep up every now and again.
Uh-huh. I'm like.
You know what you can't do in an old age? You can't creep back toward average. It's just a straight downhill.
I'm just saying, I didn't have to fight through an ACL, but already I'm getting sick of everything being broken.
So I think.
But Simmons was back and he was dominant.
Now, as we discuss our new podcast where we're going to, you know, kill everybody's childhood, I mean, a whole segment about how we're all getting old and how we can't even do normal things anymore and can't dunk
good.
Anymore and all that stuff should
I
be.
I don't think that's good listening.
Should be a part of it.
Oh.
No, because people can relate.
So for everybody listening, if you go and look up the video of Adam Schefter trying to attempt a Lambeau leap, I described audibly what it was like seeing you try and dunk and how, like, the steps before the dunk look the same as everybody else, and then you just don't go airborne. You just go forwards. Adam Schefter trying to attempt the Lambeau leap is exactly the same as you trying to dunk right now, only from, like, 4 foot lower in the air.
Listen.
He runs up. It looks like he's about to plant and then leap up, and he doesn't. He just leaps forwards. There's no vertical. Zero. That's you dunking. No vertical.
I'm
none.
Now motivated to work on my vert and get it back.
I mean, yeah.
I think I got up to like 30, 32.
If you were above 4 right now, I'd be impressed.
Oh, stop it.
I swear to God, you
do
not go.
Probably 21, 22 inch vertical.
No, you don't go vertically up in the air. You go forwards.
But that's. I'll just try to jump.
But so
it's
I saw
a mechanical issue. Then I can't do it.
I saw a video on Twitter during the week of that guy Boban, whatever his name is, in the NBA, who's like 9 foot tall and just a giant lunatic, right? Just basically stood there and slammed the ball down, like jumped about an inch and a half off the ground. Just
should I know him? I just had my NBA fantasy draft last night.
Probably, but anyway, he like evidently a huge human being. Took like a 2-inch hop and just slammed the thing, wrecked the rim, right? That's basically you playing basketball right now. Zero vertical. Now, because you're starting up there, you can still kind of get the ball in. But
maybe I just don't need it. Maybe it's because I'm playing down to the competition.
I'm just
saying, against you fools.
You don't go airborne at all. You go forwards, but you don't go up.
Can we get back to Jeffrey Simmons and what he did on only 20 snaps?
He was really good. He got a sack, a couple of hurries, had some stops. He was genuinely like a wrecking ball in both facets of the game.
You really can't ask for better production from Cameron Wake on 22 snaps. Two guys on the other end of the spectrum here, right? Cameron Wake still going after all these years. Jeffrey Simmons just starting, coming off an ACL. Both guys combined for 7 pressures on just 32 rushes between the two of them. Now, that is a nice little formula for Tennessee, who is not...
They've just had
inconsistent pass rushing the last couple of years.
That is a legitimate... like huge bonus for them going forward. Like what an addition to
for
get
sure.
like midseason. Hey, by the way, you're going to get a first round talent who turns out is a wrecking ball in there. You know, happy birthday. Like that's a hell of an addition to add to a defense sort of midway through the year. They basically just, it's like acquiring a guy in a trade, you know, randomly midway through the year, you bring in a Pro Bowl caliber player, assuming he plays at this level the whole way. That's just an insane boost. Now you've got Jarrell Casey, who's still really good always. You've got Cameron Wake, who's consistently able to generate pressure. Suddenly Harold Landry's job becomes easier because Jeffrey Simmons inside is wrecking people. That, I mean, it's difficult to overstate just what a boost that is to this Tennessee defense.
Now the Chargers on the other side, they had game-winning opportunities. They're handing it to Melvin Gordon. There's penalties. There's reviews that are short.
What a way to lose a game.
And then a fumble.
Yeah.
To lose it all. Because they had the crazy goal line finish last year, right? Chargers, Titans in London.
This was, I mean, that's an incredible way to lose a game. Really is.
That's so Chargers, though.
Yes.
That's what they do.
2 fumbles for Melvin.
When you look at this passing attack, Austin Eckler catches 7 for 118. He's got a deep ball. He's great after the catch. I mean, Eckler just continues to produce. Hunter Henry's back. I mean, he caught six for 97. He is an absolute middle-of-the-field weapon, as we probably expected. Keenan Allen's production's gone down in recent weeks, but Mike Williams is still there as a possession receiver. I mean, on paper, this Chargers team, from a playmaker standpoint, should be fantastic.
They ran the ball 21 times for 39 yards, 35 of which came after contact and fumbled twice.
Yeah, it's an ugly...
Not efficient on the ground game, Bob.
But that's a lot. I mean, I know a bunch of those are goal line carries and all that stuff, which is a good place to run the ball. It's a fine place to run the ball. But it just, even if the offensive line is not great at protecting, getting the ball into those playmakers, man, that just feels like they could do a much better job through the air.
Joey Bosa back to being dominant. He had a couple of quiet weeks against Denver and Pittsburgh, but was dominant here. A couple of sacks, a ton of pressure. Looked really good.
Dan Feeney got smoked. Yeah, I mean, it's not great. Not great for the Chargers.
No.
Are the Chargers going to be sellers?
Can you really be sellers when you have Phillip Rivers at quarterback?
No, so I don't think so, because I also don't think any of... I think all of the guys on their team...
Not by the way...
...are part of the next couple of years anyway.
Well, yeah, but not by the way, because, you know, Phillip Rivers can still get it done with this group of misfits, but more, can you send that message to him? Hey, Phillip.
No, I know.
Sorry, we're bailing on this year. Pick it up next term. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I mean, on the bright side, it might be, if the Chargers do end up with a top 10 pick, we've been saying for years, for the Rivers, Roethlisberger, Manning teams, it's time to look for your next guy. The Giants did it. The Steelers have Mason Rudolph, and they probably still in the market, even though they don't have a first-round pick, and the Chargers might have an opportunity next year.
Still really early. We're like 166 snaps into the guy's career, but has there been a more disappointing rookie than Jerry Tillery?
No.
A guy we really liked as a first-round talent, a guy who was as dominant as anybody in college football last year, nothing so
I would
far.
Say the thing about Tillery, his college career started similar. So you know my theory on there's certain guys, I think, as freshmen... Yeah. Sometimes they're late bloomers in college, and sometimes they might be 2 or 3 year guys in the NFL. I always have that in the back of my head when I know that's their progression in college. Mm-hmm. That was Tillery. He played a lot as a freshman and as a sophomore, but he didn't become what we liked as a first round player until his junior and especially senior year. So that would be the only caveat that I'd look at there.
Okay.
All right. Tennessee back on track.
Ah.
New
Chicago.
Orleans Saints,
New Orleans,
36-25. Even with an onside kick recovery at the end, Chicago was just too far behind.
So, the elephant in the room, Trubisky.
Yes,
this appeared to be the game where Bears fans wrote him off.
Up
until now, it's been PFF or assholes because they think Trubisky isn't good. You know, he's shown some stuff. Why don't you give the guy a break? You hate the Bears, right? This was the game that broke them. Where last night, every Bears fan was just like, Trubisky sucks. I'm done with it. You know what I mean? Like that, they finally caught up to where everyone else had been based off that. He was bad.
Yeah.
Really bad. And yet somehow, by the way, poor Allen Robinson still out there just getting it done despite the quarterback spot. But like, wow, that was ugly.
Through 6 weeks last year, Trubisky had a 58.8 grade and a 105.6 passer rating. Mm-hmm. So he was coming off of, he had that one game in there, which we always point to, that Tampa Bay game where he had six touchdowns.
Yeah.
So six out of his 11 touchdowns came in that one week four game where he graded at 93.7.
Mm-hmm.
But last year had consistent grades. We had 52, 49, 40, 56, 51. There's a 41 in there, a 45 in there. And then down the stretch, he performed pretty well, actually.
Yeah.
Down the stretch and into the playoffs. I think the problem was, there was a lot of Bears fans saying, well, PFF wasn't right last year. He's just regressed. And again, I think the problem is looking at player evaluation from like a linear standpoint in this Madden mentality where, okay, now you're 70 overall to start. Well, then you're going to become a 73, and then you'll be a 76. And by year 4, you're going to be an 82, and you're our guy, and that's it. We're going to build around you. That's not how player progression works. the true analysis is look at all of last season. Every throw from week one to the end of the season mattered, and it didn't even matter if it went up and down and flowed and all that stuff. It's just, here's this sample of work. And the unfortunate reality for Bears fans is that Trubisky's 2018 season is only slightly better than his 2019 season right now, where you're completely writing him off. That's it. The difference between this year and last year is he hasn't had that one outlier game, and he has not had Tariq Cohen going off, Allen Robinson bailing him out more than he has this year, Taylor Gabriel bailing him out, and tight ends hasn't had the schemed up or outstanding playmaker type of games or plays to kind of bail him out. He's just too inaccurate at this point.
Yeah, but also, the numbers don't necessarily look horrendous all the time. He had four passes thrown away yesterday. You take those out, his pass ratings are like 95.
Yeah.
So they don't always.
So it's still kind of happening. But
that's what I'm saying. You don't always.
He had those late touchdowns. He had the garbage time
right,
stuff.
Right. I know. But anyone look, that's what I'm saying. Anybody looking at him is like, well, that was terrible. But
oh, right.
the passer rating doesn't always kill him. So you get this, you're in this permanent problem of having to deal with the fact that the box score numbers aren't necessarily horrendous.
Well, that was the Washington game. In week three against Washington, he went 25 for 31 with three touchdowns. And remember, two of those touchdowns were absolute gimmies. Yes. One of them was pretty nice. One of them's real nice. And then he had a pick that essentially negated everything. It was a red zone pick. So it's one of those where the two touchdowns inflated that box score line. I mean, his stats this year are still inflated, and he has a rating of 82.8.
So we've probably hit the point where they have to be looking to move on from him, right? Not like right now. They're not going to fix this immediately.
But the offseason,
you can't roll into 2020 with Trubisky as your starter.
No, I mean,
they had a serious alternative.
I always look at this two ways, right? If I was in the room, in theory, I would have already been looking. I would have drafted Trubisky first over with my first pick, and then still been looking. All right, remember, Darnold with the Jets, I'm still looking. I'm still looking elsewhere. I'm cheating. I'm not married. I'm cheating potentially.
Right. Okay,
but with Trubisky, in the way the NFL does it, the NFL says, drafted a guy, give him 4 years.
Yes.
You don't have time to give him 4 years. Your job's on the line too, because if he doesn't pan out, you're screwed. So you need to start looking immediately. But I think the way the NFL works, once you hit this point where you showed that you might not be the guy, which Trubisky has, I think, in Bears land, then yes, they're looking.
Allen Robinson beat, was it 8 or 9 different defenders for catches? Dude, the poor guy. Honestly, I can never have enough sympathy for Allen Robinson. Yeah, 8 different defenders. So why has Anthony Miller not been good? I mean, obviously having Trubisky as your quarterback isn't going to help, but he was a guy we really liked coming out. Hasn't done it at all.
He's just flat. Yeah, he's flashed it. I mean, so this is the thing with the Bears too. I think the rest of the roster hasn't been great either. Look at the offensive line. They were the team, much like the Titans, that was supposed to be solid to good at almost every position. And if you were doing mock drafts and all that stuff, you're like, man, I just don't have a position to fill. Just get depth. Just get good players. Just draft good players. And, eventually, they'll play or you'll need them. But the offensive line hasn't been as good. They haven't run the ball as creatively and as effectively as they did last year. The defense wasn't great yesterday against Teddy. We've been waiting for this defensive regression, but they've been kind of saying, no, we're still here. But this wasn't one of their finer games. Defensively, one of their worst over the last 2 years. So I think that's just kind of the struggle. If you have better quarterback play, you can handle a little bit of regression here and there. And that's kind of like the story of the Bears.
What's really concerning for Chicago is that they're still reeling from making all these trades, thinking Trubisky was the guy. So let's say, all right, we get into the 2020 off season. Now we're looking for a new quarterback. They don't have a first round pick. They have a second, a fifth, a sixth, and a seventh round pick. They also have, I think, one of those will become a fifth rounder. But they don't have the picks to go crazy for a quarterback, and they now need one. So, ironically, is Teddy an option for the Bears as a quarterback?
I think a lot of people have talked about Foles.
By the way, is looking good now. He's looking
pretty good.
Getting his groove back.
He absolutely is.
He's still going to be Like, he's not going to morph into a dynamic downfield aggressive quarterback, but he's at least not, he's at least becoming less conservative to the point where it's not like a real problem anymore.
I mean, I could see, it's going to be fascinating because I do think, so back in 2014, when you and I were podcasting and we had far fewer than millions of listeners, I think there was a point in the NFL back then where we said, get yourself a top 15 quarterback. Get that mid-tier quarterback, right? Andy Dalton plus. Andy Dalton rule. Just got to find one of those guys. Well, guess what? I think the NFL has 32 of those guys. I think Josh Allen is he's an NFL starting quarterback. Ryan Tannehill, Marcus Mariota, Nick Foles, Gardner Minshew. All these guys are NFL starting quarterbacks. Case Keenum's like the guy that's kind of like on the... Is he the cutoff between the best backup in the NFL and an actual starter, right? There's a lot of those guys.
Yeah.
So now the goal is to get a top 10 guy. But I think along the way, you're going to see, you know, like Marcus Mariota could be the guy who goes in and has a little bit of success in Chicago. You know, there are these guys that are going to... Jameis Winston's going to move around. Like, some of these guys are going to move around and have starting jobs all the while you're looking for that next big thing.
But that's what's really... This has gone from sort of... Like, Chicago Bears, in terms of optimism for the future, must have just driven off a cliff. Because they went from, hey, we finally got our quarterback, things are great, we make the trade for Khalil Mack, now we're in business, we're going to be challenging for years, to, uh-oh, Trubisky's not the guy, and now because we made the moves, we don't have the ammo to go get another guy, now we're stuck with a retread of some kind.
So
now you're in this spot where, like, if you just fire your coach, like, things are going badly, get rid of your coach. The most exciting thing that can happen is you get the next great young thing, right? The untested new coach who's going to bring in, you know, at least something, the unknown, the idea that we don't know what this guy could be. So obviously it's all hopeful. It's going to be great. The worst thing that you can do is you fire your coach and you hire a guy who's got history of going like 500, slightly above 500. You're like, ugh.
John Fox?
Right. You bring it, you hire your guy, you bring in John Fox. You're like, oh God. Like, what is the best thing that's going to happen is we're going to go 10-6 next year. Way great. Like, this is where the Bears now are with quarterback. Like, the best thing they can do is get a Teddy Bridgewater or a Jameis or a Mariota and be like, well, it didn't work out for them. Maybe it'll go well here, because the rest of our roster is good.
It's a tough spot to be in. And I think if the 2017 Jags were honest with themselves when they had Blake Bortles, maybe the 2016 Jags when they had Blake Bortles, perhaps they would have taken a few shots elsewhere, especially with that roster that was, you know, getting some talent.
Mm-hmm.
If they had taken a shot on a Mahomes or a Watson or a Trubisky, I mean, whoever they had an opportunity to get, they did have opportunities at Mahomes and Watson.
God, that's the other thing that would make that a real kick in the stones, is that, like, I'm not saying they're idiots for doing it, because we had him that way pre-draft, but you took Trubisky. The two guys you didn't take are Mahomes and Watson, who are like two of the most spectacular young quarterbacks in the NFL right now. So it's like being the team that drafted, was it Mike Munchak Mike Mamula in the year where it was like Troy Aikman, Barry Sanders, Deion Sanders, Mike Mamula,
Brian Anger over Russell Wilson.
Right. You're the guy, you've not just took the wrong guy, like, everybody else was a superstar.
This is the whole point about quarterbacks. So even if I looked at Josh Allen, Josh Rosen, Lamar Jackson and said, okay, here are some issues with their game, you just take them.
Sure.
Just take a million of them.
Yeah. I'm just saying that it's unspooled in the most spectacular manner possible for the Chicago Bears.
Anyway, we'll have much more
but
on
the
that
Saints,
situation. Let's talk about the Saints.
Have they gone undefeated with Teddy?
Yes. Other than the game against the Rams in LA where Breeze came out early.
Right. But the idea was, so Breeze is talking about practicing next week, potentially coming back.
Yes.
Like, from, they may be screwed and completely, like, too far behind everybody by the time he gets back. They haven't lost a game with
this is what I'm saying with the NFC. I mean, think about some of these potential playoff matchups. If you've got Saints and Packers, the Vikings mixed in there, the 49ers who still haven't lost a game yet, Seattle in there, Dallas in there, Eagles potentially if they can you know, get back on track. I mean, every single NFC playoff matchup looks great.
Yeah.
Like literally anything can happen. So I think, you know, the Saints, one of the stories of the season, I think, is Teddy slowly working his way back.
So the Teddy thing is fascinating, right? Because he basically turned down the chance to potentially start this season for somebody and took the next 1 year deal.
I don't know if anybody was real. Was anybody really offering starting jobs for him?
I think, wasn't there talk that the Jags were going to give him a starting gig? Whatever. Or maybe it was Miami. Actually, that sounds more likely. Miami.
Well, there's a reason.
Right. So that, to be fair, you can understand that. But anyway, the idea was, in theory, he turned down the chance to start for one more year as Drew Brees backup. Now, this is like the perfect scenario for him because he's come in. He's actually got a run of starts instead. And actually, I think the way it's gone has been perfect for him as well because he didn't look good early on. Has like worked off the rust in the past few weeks, has actually looked like a viable starting quarterback who doesn't have the problems that were his main criticism early in that run. What does his future look like? Is he now legitimately still waiting for Drew Brees to just leave, retire, so that he can take over for the Saints? Does he end up being the Bears starting quarterback in 2020? Like, where does he end up?
So from an NFL point of view, I still don't know, in this world of 32 starters, where a lot of them aren't that different, I'm not terribly excited.
It sort of feels that he has been working to be the successor in New Orleans, right?
Yeah.
It's like at some point this guy's going to go,
but also,
because he's old.
But Brees has that same Brady mentality where I think in their head,
they can play them 50.
They really think that they can do it, and there's no signs of slowing down. And Brees, it's not like Brees has this chronic dealing with, he just had a freak injury on his thumb and he's going to bounce back and he's going to be fine, right? Yeah. I mean, I don't think there's any, other than salary cap issues where they keep pushing it and pushing it and pushing it, I don't know if there's a sign of slowdown in New Orleans or Brees retiring.
You know, what I think might also be the difference between the recovery speed and some of these old people and us? When Drew Brees wrecked his thumb, like the next week, he's there on the sideline with this weird rubber contraption doing like endless thumb movements on the sideline.
Yeah, they rehab.
Right. But you're probably supposed to do like, you know, do this 5 times a day, you know, 3 sets of 50. And he's just out there on the sideline during the game doing endless of them. You and me, we probably do like a set once.
No, we work.
And then stop.
We have to work.
At the moment, I don't think we are.
My job used to be to rehab. I used to rehab as my job.
I'm not saying you back, you know, when you were young and didn't break down as often. Oh. I'm saying you now with your busted up knees, you know, can't do 2 a week. I'm saying right now you're not doing what he's doing with his endless thumb squats.
Or Jeffrey Simmons just rehabbing his ACL nonstop for eight months. He's got an advantage.
That might have something to do with our relative lack of recovery speed right now.
Anyway, the Saints are legit. By the way, Khalil Mack, only 3 pressures. Ryan Ramczyk.
Dude, Ryan Ramczyk is good.
I mean, just the Saints offensive tackles, again, Teron Armstead and Ryan Ramczyk, both dominant as pass blockers and in the run game in this one. They are still the best duo in the NFL. All right, let's go to the Baltimore Ravens beating the Seattle Seahawks 30-16. Let's start with Lamar. This was another game where I told you the rain had a factor. And maybe not necessarily in how well the guys threw the ball, but the output.
Are you saying that just because Mark Andrews couldn't catch anything yesterday?
Yeah, man. Lamar finished 9 for 20 with at least 5 passes that were direct drops or at least should have been caught. He had a nice seam up the to Andrews that should have been caught. I mean, he also got away with a slightly underthrown deep ball that got caught, whatever. But Lamar threw the ball really well, and then he just went straight cheat mode as a runner. I like the fact that he's just sitting on this scrambling ability. He only had 5 scrambles, again, for 86 yards. But then the 2 biggest runs of the game, they have a 4th-and-2 touchdown run, and then a 3rd-and-7, I think, where it's just a designed run. Like, here, stop me. Mm-hmm. And he's picking it up. So he finishes the game with, I mean, an official 14 for 116. It was really 11 carries for 119. 11 for 119 if you take out his kneels. That's tough to stop.
It is. This is an interesting game because it kind of hinged on DK Metcalf just throwing the ball on the floor.
So that was weird too. Can we finish with Lamar though?
Yeah.
So the other part of his game, right? So even though he went 9 for, like, statistically, the game was not good, even though he threw the ball well, 9 for 20 for 143. This is the type of stat line you see in college football all the time. You see a quarterback go, like JT Barrett used to do this all the time at Ohio State. 9 for 20 for 140. He was missing throws left and right, but he carried like 23 for 128 and a couple scores. So it's a little different, but it's one of those like speed doesn't slump type of concepts. Even in Lamar's worst games throwing the ball, and this wasn't his worst game throwing the ball, but statistically it wasn't great, he still has the rushing ability that you could put up a passer rating of 69.4 and still find a way to put points on the board because of your running ability. All that said, you've got a pick six and a fumble six. So it's not like it was a dominant performance by the Ravens offense, but I found it to be a very impressive game for Lamar Jackson.
Yeah. Lamar is a unique proposition to deal with for a defense. He is extremely hard to figure out, but particularly because they've embraced it. This is what the Baltimore Ravens offense that we speculated around draft time needed to look like. There was a path to NFL success for Lamar Jackson, but it looks different to the path for any other quarterback. And the Ravens embrace that. They have created an offense that hinges on what he can do, and consequently, it's really hard to stop. NFL teams are not used to facing it. It does some unique things. It puts him in a good position to succeed, and it makes everything a hell of a lot harder for the defense. Now, it's even more difficult to stop if he could get just a little bit more accurate, which is what we saw the first couple of weeks of the season. He wasn't missing those throws. And by missing them, I'm not necessarily talking about where you're just like the ball doesn't get to where it's supposed to be, but ones where you make it difficult for guys to catch it.
The actual ball location yesterday wasn't great, but again, I think in the rain you get a little bit of a pass. So I'm giving everybody a pass today.
Apparently.
There are certain narratives that we could push that match up with everything we've pushed previously, and I don't want to go overboard pushing it if there are mitigating circumstances like rain.
Okay.
That's all.
Fair enough.
But you're right. There could be better.
And then, as I say, so this game, it was a close game, and then DK Metcalf just threw the ball on the ground, and apart from it didn't turn out it was just a fumble and a turnover, they managed to scoop it and score. So immediately, now you know, that changes everything. It's a giant swing. So that was a huge part of where this game started to go away from Seattle.
I tweeted yesterday, is this not Seattle's nightmare game? This is why they run the ball 35 times a game. Because they go back and they just look at it and they're like, okay, we scored 16 points. It was really 13. They added the late field goal. We scored 16 points. Russell had to throw the ball 41 times. He dropped back 44 times. And we only got 21 carries for Chris Carson and one for CJ Proces. Like, we didn't run the ball enough. This is their biggest fear. They threw the ball twice as much as they ran it.
It certainly didn't. It didn't help the people that want to argue against that Russell Wilson narrative of he can't be trusted when he has to throw the ball above, you know, X number of times, because ultimately that's what had to happen in this game when the thing started to get away from them, and this wasn't Russell Wilson's best game.
But even before it got away, like the general flow of the game, they probably passed a little bit more than they normally would. And then this is that game once a year where you say, okay, so you take away his one touchdown was awesome under pressure, and he kind of flipped it up and he got it to Lockett, who made a nice catch in the end zone. But under pressure, you just can't sustain great play under pressure. Like, we talk about that all the time, right? So Wilson under pressure was 6 for 18 for 109 with that touchdown in there. But even after that, like with the touchdown, 73.6 passer rating, like that's still better than expected. But 6 for 18 is rough. Like, that's tough to, like, that's coming down to earth after he's been killing it under pressure. The clean pocket stuff, though, 14 for 23 for 132 with the pick six. And the pick six was bad. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was late. It was terrible. Marcus Peters gets it. So the clean pocket stuff production was not good. This is the argument against Wilson. If we give him, you know, quick game and we replace the run game with just him dropping back and making good decision after good decision, inevitably he's going to let us down with the pick six. Even though overall it was not a terrible game for Russell Wilson, he was still pretty good. But I think rain game didn't help, and he missed a couple throws, and he had the bad pick six that probably ruined everything.
Right. It really is. I mean, this is the game that those people would point to say, look, see, you want us to open it up. This is what happens when we do. And, you know, ultimately, it probably comes down to he needs to actually show that isn't true at some point. Like, it's as much as you can sit there and defend and say, well, it shouldn't be. There's no reason why that would happen. These are the games that he needs to not have if he's going to be trusted more.
Yeah.
Now, maybe he doesn't care. Like, maybe he's happy being the quarterback that attempts the fewest amount of passes in the NFL, knowing that he can be the most efficient in that scenario. Let the team run this kind of vaguely archaic looking offensive game plan, and to hell with it, we'll win a Super Bowl. But maybe he wants, you know, I don't know. Maybe he's fine with that. But conceptually, if he wants to be seen as the same as every other quarterback, then he needs to prove that he's not going to do this when that happens.
I will say, for all that we hammer home the concept of run games overrated and all that stuff and put more on Russell Wilson's plate, there is this idea that I think the way they run their play action game, and they, you know, he's got 23% of his dropbacks have been off play action. That's about middle of the pack. They do run concepts that are favorable to his game, right? I mean, I also don't feel terribly comfortable with Russell Wilson dropping back 50 times a game and, you know, quick game this and intermediate that and just straight drop back game all the time, because he's going to do so many things outside of structure that it becomes a little bit more volatile, although over time it'll be fine. But he has a rating of 133.6, 10.7 yards per attempt just off play action this year. You know, I think they put him into favorable play action concepts, which he's awesome at, because it's like, here's the deep over, here's the dig, you know, hit the deep ball, and he can do that. So I'm kind of back and forth on it. I still think over time you're going to do better putting the ball in his hands.
Yeah, and that may be true, but as I say,
at
some point he needs to prove that that's true.
Yeah.
Otherwise that will perpetually be the narrative, and that's what will happen. So this, I mean, he didn't in this game. Next time things go south, Russell,
yeah,
how about you show up more?
How about the Ravens secondary? We talked about this on the preview show. Having high-end playmakers like Marcus Peters and Earl Thomas back there, just incredible to what they could potentially do. You can't force like four turnovers per game or anything like that, but just the ability to get the ball back for your offense the way Peters and Earl play adds a lot to that D.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll help. They're an interesting team, Baltimore, because I think we kind of assumed that they'd fallen off a bit, and some of the early evidence was suggesting that, but they're starting to kind of get back on track. There's still a pretty concerning lack of general pass rush pressure, or primary sources of pass rush pressure. They're able to scheme up some, but there's nobody out there that's going to wreck people consistently, and that at some point will be an issue.
Let's discuss the coaching really quick. I'm sure our friends at The Forecast discussed it already on their podcast, which we highly suggest you guys download and check out. They'll talk a lot more about game theory type of stuff. We've been critical of Pete Carroll a few times on this show about he's kicking field goals and fourth and one situations and all this stuff. I mean, this was very conservative Pete Carroll, punting on fourth and short, field goals on fourth and short. Jim Harbaugh looked like he was going to line up for a field goal, would have been like a 30-yard field goal or whatever. He comes back out after the timeout and says, no, I'm going for it.
Yep.
On fourth and two. And I believe it was 13-10 at the time. Then it put them up two scores,
right?
Because they got it on fourth and two.
We've made that point before, that getting those decisions consistently right just gives you such an edge over coaches that aren't doing it.
Sorry, it was 13-13 at the time. And the Ravens basically said, we're at the 8-yard line, fourth and two.
Mm-hmm.
The decision there is pretty simple. The 3 points is really nothing. I mean, the 3 points does nothing for you in the long run compared to if I convert this. And then, oh, by the way, if I don't convert it, they have to go 92 yards to score. So the likelihood that we'll have another field goal opportunity pretty soon is about the same as Seattle having a field goal opportunity soon.
Yeah.
So we're actually just as likely to score next. I mean, that's the reasoning. The Ravens continue to make this good decision over again.
You can anecdotally paint best and worst case scenarios in either situation. The point with all these decisions is, What do the numbers say overall? What are the percentage chances of this happening? And teams like the Ravens are consistently going with the bigger edge and therefore getting better results over the long haul. And it just gives you a consistent edge over coaches that aren't, over coaches that are thinking purely in anecdotal terms. What do I feel like is the most likely outcome here? It's like, well, okay, but what you feel like is the most likely outcome probably isn't. And there are numbers that suggest something else. So if we run with those, we have a way better chance of this thing working out. Now, every now and again, you'll get one right, or you'll look like, you know, but it's just taking the decision out of the hands of the guy that's essentially just making an educated guess versus what the numbers say. And it's a huge edge for these teams.
Make good decisions over time, and I think it's going to work out for you, and that's what the Ravens are doing. That might be our AWS good decision of the week, right?
I would assume so, but I don't know.
We'll see. We'll see what comes out. All right, Sunday Night Football. Dallas Cowboys 37, Philadelphia Eagles 10.
Yeah.
So last week at this time, we said both of these offenses, we used the same description. It's like, I think the two quarterbacks are playing pretty well, but this week felt disjointed. Last week it was Dallas against the Jets, and it was the Eagles. Who did they play last week? They just felt disjointed offensively against the Vikings, right? It's like, here's a good play here and there on third down or whatever. This game, it felt like Kellen Moore was back. He's got his play calling down, and he's like, hey, you think I'm going to run? I'm running play action. You think I'm going to play action? I'm running. Like, he just felt like they were in much better rhythm, and they sprinkled Zeke in efficiently.
Yeah, I think this was a game that was essentially won on both sides of the ball by Dallas's front, by the trenches. Dallas's offensive line was able to completely neutralize what should be a really good and dominant Eagles defensive line. And in particular, this is the first game where Tyron Smith and Lyle Collins are both back. And, you know, we've said before, I don't know, there's that many more non-quarterback players that have as big an impact when they're not there than Tyron Smith does for Dallas. So Smith and Collins being back really had an effect. The Eagles didn't get much pressure at all. They got, you know, three different guys got sacks, but two of those guys, the sack was all they got in terms of pressure in the game. Brandon Graham had one hurry. Nothing else. Fletcher Cox had a sack and nothing else. So they were able to really slow down that pass rush, and they beat them when it came to the run game as well. Like, right, they dominated on the ground, hence Zeke's impressive day. And then the other side of the ball, you had the Eagles offensive line. You know, Lane Johnson is another one of those players, arguably the best right tackle in the NFL. He was kind of getting his ass kicked by DeMarcus Lawrence.
Yeah.
And there were multiple Cowboys players that got significant amounts of pressure. So I really think they won this game on, like, in the trenches on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, I agree with you, man. I wasn't expecting a blowout like this. They felt like two evenly matched teams. I did hear Eric on the forecast a little bit talking about, hey, do we need to rethink a lot of what we thought about the Eagles?
Apparently.
Like, what's missing here? I thought that they would have great playmakers, in part because of DeSean Jackson, but I thought because of the variety of guys that they were throwing out there, defenses were going to have trouble. We thought that their offensive line would be great. I mean, Jason Peters got hurt. We're not surprised by that.
Yeah.
But and then defensively, we keep saying, they've got that good pass rush, which you said was neutralized yesterday, but they just don't have the guys to cover on the back end. Rasul Douglas torched again. Amari Cooper making incredible plays. This kind of feels like the Eagles pre-Super Bowl team, where they just can't stop the pass, and then the passing game's just inconsistent enough to kind of keep them out of it.
Yeah, they desperately need a high-end coverage player. Are we getting played off?
I think we are.
Huh. Wow.
We're getting played off.
Huh. This is like the audio version of the hook that comes in.
Oh, yeah.
Yanks.
Nobody likes our... Did everybody leave YouTube? It's just in our ear, Sam. We're just...
Yeah, because if nobody else hears this, it's like the two of us just had a stroke live on
so
air.
There's,
just kept talking
this is,
about
this is what
random.
I'm saying. Like, ESPN's not going to pick up our show because we react to everything that's in our headset.
We didn't answer the voice.
ESPN's not going to come knocking.
Look, we didn't answer the voice in our ear. That's the important thing.
This is just very unprofessional.
Very bad. Again. Don't answer the voice.
Anyway.
I think it's reasonable to react to music, start randomly playing.
So Carson Wentz, this was his worst game. Put the ball in harm's way too much. He's, you know, holding the ball. Like, he's that guy that's the spectacular plays under pressure offset by the bad ones because he's
right
trying to make so many of them. you know, this is like holding the ball too long, fumbles, had a couple misreads of coverage, but also had some spectacular throws in there as well. And then I just think Dak has these games where he just looks so comfortable and efficient. And other than heaving up an interception that was kind of weird,
yeah,
he looks pretty good.
There's some game flow sort of things that impact games like this as well. Like, you know, obviously Dallas start well. Immediately, like, Carson Wentz drops back, helmet to the ball pops out, immediate turnover, Dallas march down, double the lead. Like, yeah, those kind of plays. This is what's kind of interesting about football, is that single plays like that can completely change how games are going to go.
Sure.
Like, this could have been a back and forth interesting battle where both teams, you know, were kind of holding their own, but immediately through one play, the Eagles are like hip deep in a hole. And now everything changes because you've got to, like, you probably don't have to, but teams do. They completely sort of change the game plan because, oh crap, now we're 14-0 down. We got to start making some moves to get back in this. Otherwise, it's going to get away from us and everything goes wrong. Realistically speaking, you're only like a drive down. There's a lot of ball game left. You could probably execute the game plan as you had it. And that might actually still be the smartest thing to do. But
I felt like they were still trying to establish the run.
Sure. I just think that that game sort of swung the way everything was going to go. Suddenly Wentz, you know, feels he's going to make a lot more plays. And that, like, as much as his game had kind of been predicated on making those plays anyway, like, he wasn't able to in this game, and suddenly everything goes bad.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying about the Eagles' offense. They lack, again, I always use Brady, Breeze, even Rodgers, right? They lack a little bit of that. Here's this 10 or 12 play drive where I'm going to go 6 for 6 for, you know, 55 yards, 7 for 7 for 50 yards, whatever it is. And it's just, you know, short stuff, move it down, and have some patience. It is too predicated on, I think, on those chunk plays. And when it works, it looks great. When it doesn't, then you score 10.
Hmm.
Your boy Boston Scott got 7 carries for 32 yards in garbage time when they were just trying to run the clock out.
Also had a nice return that got negated because some idiot blocked in the bank.
Yeah, that's another just sideshow for us. Like, here are my
Boston Scott time.
Just my 10 favorite players.
Yeah.
We each just discuss our 10 favorite players, irrelevant of anything.
It's funny the way
that Terry McLaurin hour.
It's like, you know, the way the Giants replaced Eli Manning with Eli Manning. Like, Darren Sproles goes down, and the Eagles replace Darren Sproles with Darren Sproles.
It's not Darren Sproles yet.
And Daniel Jones isn't Eli Manning yet, but, you know, we're going to roll with it.
Boston Scott, the next Darren Sproles.
Yeah.
All right, we kept it under 2 hours, Sam.
Just about.
Is Dallas back as a Super Bowl contender? They lost to the Jets a week ago, by the way.
Right. It's going to take a while to get over that.
This is my wife's analysis, right? Because I'm like, I thought the NFC is loaded. She goes, they just lost to the Jets last week. Maybe the AFC is better than you think. That's her.
Fair point.
Her take.
It's a fair point.
Maybe it is. Maybe the Sam Darnold Jets are the real Super Bowl contenders. We'll find out tonight on Monday Night Football, and it's not the Cowboys.
Oh, yeah. What's our 30-second analysis of that?
I think the Jets D might be able to keep it close. I think the Jets offense will have a tough time against New England's defense.
Yeah.
It's one of those, like, road division games. It's on paper, it's like, oh, it's New England, it's the Jets. And, you know, but I think
ultimately the Patriots understand how to beat that defense. Therefore, they should win.
I also said, feels like the wild card hype game where the team gets smoked. So either way, I'll be right. I think New England wins, though.
Okay.
There it is. Week 7.
Now play the music.
Is in the books. This is real music in my ear. Is this real?
Yeah.
This is the real one.
Now we're at.
Hey, ESPN, we are professional enough. Buy the podcast. Come get us. Let us, or NFL, just not that we're trying to be sold or anything, but
I don't want them to buy it.
We could be like a big, we could have more than millions. We could have tens of millions of listeners.
Okay.
I don't even know what I'm selling. All right, guys, we'll be back Wednesday on YouTube and Thursday on your podcast provider.
Mm-hmm.
Get PFF Elite. Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in Week 1. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL.